Hello and welcome to Radio Free Nintendo. This is episode 401. I'm your host, Jonathan Metz, and with me, as always, are John Lindemann.
Guess who's back? Back again. Lindy's back. Tell a friend.
I'll tell Guillaume Veillette, my friend.
I still have time to cancel my Amiibo pre-order.
And James Jones is here.
By the time you hear this, you will live in a world where Hatsune Miku has appeared on the Dave Letterman show.
That's tonight, and
we are recording this before the end times.
What I wonder if you're in the audience for that. Are they doing a hologram deal, or is it just a big TV screen?
But if we're still recording when that airs, I'll be on it laughing my ass off.
Yeah, man, what Letterman? He just must be like, I don't care. I'm retiring. I'll burn this place down. I don't give a shit. We'll put on this anime girl. I don't care.
Anderson Cooper and a CG anime girl. Have fun.
Yeah.
Have fun, internet.
Man. I think the real story there is that Anderson Cooper is actually Hatsune Miku. But anyway, we're going to talk about Nintendo this week, as we usually do. Before we get started, I want to say thank you everyone again for making RFN 400 happen. It was a glorious weekend. And we had just such a wonderful time. I have to say, the studio part of it was not quite what I expected. It was strange, but I guess once we got going, it felt like it was just really easy, and we just rolled right on through it. I mean, someone mentioned on Gaff that it was a long show, but it didn't actually feel long. It just felt really smooth, and it just flowed through. And that's how it felt when we were doing it. You know, it was pretty easy. We originally, I expected that we would all have our own microphones and our own headsets and everything. That's not the way it was set up when we got there, and we decided to just roll with it. And we had these two shotgun mics that we mixed together into a single channel. But I think there's pros and cons to that. I'm kind of glad because we didn't have all that gear between us. And so it was literally just us sitting around the table. And
it was more personal. It was more intimate.
I think so. Yeah. Yeah. And I think you can tell that too. I mean, we're maybe speaking more quietly than we do on a normal show just because the person you're talking to is like 2 feet away from you. And so you don't have to yell, and you don't it was easier to cut in. It was easier to throw the conversation back and forth.
The lights were dim. There was the walls were covered in velour.
My hand was on James's thigh. It was quite...
No, absolutely not. I had a chaperone between us.
Chaperone.
It did feel like more of a round table, though. Because I think square table. I think if we each would have had our own mics, it would have probably felt more like an RFN panel, where it's kind of like, you know, talking to the microphone, no one can hear you, that kind of thing, you know?
Right.
I would have faced the other way if we all had our own mics.
I would have been in a corner.
I mean, so the studio, it was a music studio ultimately, primarily. Yeah. So that was, that kind of set up the situation in a way.
Right. And I'm not sure that they'd ever had a podcast in there. And so I'm not sure that I don't know that there was like a standard setup that they had ready to go. It was more like, hey, here's kind of what we were thinking, you know, but it worked out. I think it sounds pretty good. I know it came out a little bit quiet, and I apologize for that. That's mainly because, the earphones that I was using to edit are really good, and so you don't have to have the volume up very loud, and I probably should have listened to it over more normal headphones before I published it.
See, the trick is to use a known quantity. You listen to something ahead of time, but you know how loud it should be.
Yeah, no, I hear you. It's because I wanted to be in the same room with you guys while you were playing Choaniki and all that stuff. And
are you sure you wanted to be in that room?
I did. That was, are that you was sure really
it was
funny.
It was want or need? Just think about that.
Yeah. Longing.
I have certain needs that have to be fulfilled, John.
Oh, God.
That is, by the way, that isn't even the dumbest video we uploaded. That's amazing.
Yeah.
Having sat through them all, that's like maybe the fourth dumbest, which is impressive.
There's a lot of good videos, and I've tried to let people know about it, but if you have not seen the videos, they're all on YouTube now. There's an article on the website. I can link to it in the show notes for this episode as well that collects all of them, and so you don't even have to go to YouTube, although you should go subscribe to our new channel.
What's it called? NWR TV?
It is. And, but yeah, all of those videos, and we made like 20 or 25 videos, and most of them are about an hour long. So it's a lot of content. That's actually what we did most of the weekend, was just play games, stream them, and, make those things. And all of them, we had, my podcast microphone set up on the table so you could hear all of us talk. And so it's like RFN, except with a video of a game that we're playing and we're talking about that game. So it really is a lot like listening to the podcast, and I hope people will go check that out. Anyway, let's get into new business, and I'm going to go first here with Smash Brothers for Nintendo 3DS. I'm the only one of us who's gotten it so far. Hopefully that will be a temporary situation, but you know, I'm a big Smash Brothers fan, and was really curious about the 3DS version. I mean, obviously curious enough to buy it, and I'd heard that it was good, and ultimately, I don't know that this will be my favorite Smash Brothers game. I mean, it's my current favorite, I guess, because, you know, I don't have anyone to play Melee with. So I do like it better than Brawl. I think it feels better than Brawl. I think the characters are more interesting. They've done a lot of smart things, like Luigi now has a good Final Smash that uses the vacuum cleaner. You know, like a lot of real just basic stuff that was like, yeah, you should fix that. And they did. So I'm happy about that. And then, you know, they've added some new stuff. Like, I haven't gotten deep into the customization yet, but, you know, if I can change out Mario's, like, down B from being that sort of useless flood thing into anything else that I might actually use in combat, then I'm happy to do that. So I think there's a lot of neat little tweaks that they've done to make it better. The new items are great. I like a lot of the new items. I like a lot of the new levels. Maybe one or two that I don't like as much, but that's kind of typical for Smash. There's always a couple that I find a little bit annoying, but most of them I really enjoy. And I've been playing it almost entirely single player so far, and I've still found it to be pretty fulfilling. There's a lot of stuff to unlock. They bring back the challenge board, you know, where you can use the golden hammer if there's one that you just can't do. But the board gives you a lot of hints about where to go next and what to try. And it's been good for me, especially in playing it single player. That challenge board gives you motivation to go into normal Smash mode and play with a certain character a few times and sort of get familiar with them, because when you play with Samus 10 times, you unlock something. And, you know, maybe you unlock something that's not really that useful, and it could be a trophy or something like that. But sometimes there's stages, sometimes they're new items to use in battle. You know, and it also does the weird thing from Melee and Brawl where if you play for a certain amount of time, you unlock new rules. So I know someone was complaining that the item frequency seems to be a little too high. And I'd say it does seem a little bit higher than in past games. So that's perfectly fine with me, because I like the items. But I'm sure that you can customize that. It just may not be available from the beginning. It's just one of those weird things where some of the options are locked. And I don't understand that. There must be some kind of thinking behind it, but I think if you keep playing, eventually you'll be able to tweak all the little things that you want, because this is a Sakurai game and he's all about that customization.
He is. I last night I played with Karen the Subspace Emissary in Brawl, and I think back in the day, like, I managed to convince myself that it was not so bad, but playing it last night, it's just wow.
It's not really fun. It's not much fun at all.
Yeah, it's not fun at all. So this game has like some sort of Smash Run as single player. So is that any good?
I'm kind of mixed on Smash Run so far. I've only played it a few times. It's not something that has been pulling me back in to play over and over again. I know a few people are really into it, and I think if you get really into the character customization, a lot of that stuff is, I mean, when you play Smash Run, you can play with your customized characters, and Smash Run is very much about customization, because as you beat up on enemies in Smash Run, you get all these little item drops that change your stats. It's one of the best ways to unlock new custom moves and new equipment, new items that you can equip on your characters. And that's not just on the Miis, that's on all the characters. You know, it seems to be its own kind of loop, where the more you play Smash Run, the more stuff you unlock that you can use in Smash Run, and maybe the mode gets more fun as you keep playing it. So I'm open to that, and I find it enjoyable enough that I will go back to it a few more times. And it might be something fun to play in local multiplayer, which I haven't really gotten into yet. But as a single player thing, it's not immediately all that exciting. You know, it's similar to, I guess it's the most similar to like the adventure mode in Melee.
Okay.
Where there's a set level that has a certain layout to it, and you're going through it, and there's a bunch of smaller enemies. There's a few big enemies, mostly smaller enemies. And then every now and then, one of the other Smash characters might show up. But for the most part, you're beating up on Goombas and, you know, Metals from the Mega Man series and little, you know, little things like that, random enemies that you might recognize from different franchises. And most of them aren't too hard to kill, and they pop out little things. There's treasure chests to find, and those are fun because, you know, they usually give you something really good. And then, you know, you do that for 5 minutes, and sometimes that time flies by, and sometimes it feels like it takes forever. It depends a lot on which character you're using, because there is a fair bit of platforming here, and some characters are just better at that than others.
Yeah.
And then at the end of the 5 minutes, they have some kind of randomly chosen battle against other Smash Brothers characters who've also been, you know, they're AI controlled, or maybe they're local, but they've been going through doing the same thing. So they have all kinds of weird stats. But honestly, you know, all these stats that you're gathering, they don't really feel immediately impactful on that battle at the end. And sometimes the battle at the end will have crazy rules, like everybody will have 300%, or it's just a competition to see who can climb the highest in the level, or who can kill the most small enemies in 30 seconds or 60 seconds. So sometimes they're not even really normal battles, and all the power-ups that you've been collecting may or may not actually be useful in this randomly selected thing at the end. So, you know, I'm not convinced yet that that's actually a good mode. It may be, it's not bad, I don't think, but I don't know that it really adds a whole lot. I've had much more satisfaction just playing Smash Battles, random, and just trying out all the new characters, all the new items, all the new levels. That's what I enjoy about this stuff. And then ultimately, the game's longevity will depend on, you know, me playing with other people. And on that front, although I have not gotten to try local in the full version yet, I did play some online matches last night with TYP. And I have not put this mode through the ringer yet. I have not done like a full battery of testing on it with a whole bunch of different people. But with TYP, it was easy to set up. He created a room and I joined it, and we were battling within, you know, 30 seconds probably. It was very quick to do. We had Skype open, and he was concerned that might cause too much bandwidth interference for the game to be smooth. But for the most part, the game ran fine. Of course, it was just one-on-one, but that's how I prefer to play Smash most of the time. So the fact that it ran smoothly, I was very happy with. You know, occasionally like a little hiccup, but it would be like once in the match, you know, which I think that's totally tolerable. Not a big deal. It's just, you know, maybe some momentary thing happened. And
I mean, it's on a handheld, right? So, you know,
yeah.
I mean, I don't know. Like, that's the thing. I haven't played any online games like this on Vita, but I don't see the experience being much smoother than that. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it's all wireless, of course. I mean, there is no hardline connection for your 3DS. So the fact that, yes, it was all on wireless, I thought it ran really well. And we had a great time. We played probably 10 matches over the course of about 30 minutes. And it was very even. It was competitive. We had all the items on. And again, I mean, the game almost never had any hitch at all. There were a couple times where I lost the connection and it booted me out and I had to rejoin. And I don't know what caused that. You know, it could have been a problem on my end. It could be a problem with the net code. It's hard to say with a sample size of one from my personal experience. The first time it happened was between matches, which I thought, well, thank goodness, you know, at least it didn't dump a match on us. The second time it did happen during a match, but, it was quick to get back on. So, you know, not a perfect experience by any means, but I would say it was as good or better than the best performance I ever saw in Brawl. And Brawl had an insane variety. I mean, there were times when Brawl was kind of playable and fun, but then, you know, halfway through the match, it would just go to shit, or you'd only get one or two matches in, and then everything would just go terrible. And most of the time I tried to play Brawl online, it was just really bad. So first impression, small sample size again, but first impression is I found it really promising. And the fact that We were able to play that game smoothly and competitively while also having Skype open and just chatting the whole time. Was really promising, because that's basically the way I want to use the mode. You know, I don't want to do four, it'd be nice to do 3- and 4-player matches online, but I don't really think that's realistic, and that's not something that I would do often anyway. Most of the time it's just going to be, hey, you and me, let's go head to head. And that seems to work, at least in this case. So I'm very optimistic about it, and I had a really good time playing online with 2YP. So I hope that that will perpetuate into other online experiences. But there's plenty of time to try that out.
Yeah, it's like, if it works, we'll take it. Good?
Yeah.
Okay.
And overall, I mean, I have to say, playing Smash on a portable has been really nice, because it is a very fully-fledged Smash Brothers game. I mean, it's very impressive. When you get into it and you get the feel for it and you see just how much content there is here, I don't think there's many handheld games that have ever been released that can compare with this one for just the sheer amount of stuff in it. It does not feel like a miniature version of the game. It doesn't feel like they've cut things out of it. I mean, we know that they did cut things out of it, like Ice Climbers, but there's so much stuff that is in it that it feels really full-featured, feels like a really good value. And I've been playing it at restaurants. I played it at the allergist office when I went to go get a shot. You know, I've played it in the bathroom. I played it on the couch. I played it at the dinner table. I played it in my study when I was sitting at the computer watching Hulu. I mean, you can just take it around with you. And the fact that it feels like Smash Brothers no matter where you go has been something that I guess I should have expected, but I really didn't. You know, it's kind of like the Wii U. It's like, until you have the gamepad and you can actually play a game walking around your house and not even looking at the TV, it's hard to appreciate just how cool that is and how freeing it is. And being able to play Smash Brothers on a portable system is not something I ever thought that I wanted or needed, but now that I have it, I really like it. And I've really been taking advantage of that. And it has definitely made me want to take my 3DS with me all over the place. Not just for Street Pass, which I do a lot anyway, but to actually pull it out and actually open it and play it, no matter where I am. So I've been very, very pleased with it so far. And I'm, you know, it's a big game. It's a dense game, and it takes a while to unpack everything. So, I think my opinion of it will continue to evolve. And ultimately, I still expect that the console version will be my favorite, because, you know, it'll run better. It'll look better. It'll be easier to put together a local match. And the online will probably run better. But this is not a bad version of the game by any means. In fact, it's really good. It's better than I expected, and I'm really glad that I bought it. So one other thing I played really quickly, I'll talk about this, is a Wii U eShop game called Block Drop U, which I think has been mentioned a couple times on our podcast. It's a $2 game, really cheap, really small, little indie game on the Wii U eShop. And it's a puzzle game, and I don't know, I think I'd heard recently something about it, but I was just looking through the eShop, and I saw that it was really cheap, and I thought, you know, I think I've heard good things about this, maybe.
Clearly, the praise was deafening.
Yeah. No, it was just, I was looking for something to do, and I wanted to get something cheap to talk about on the show. And this is actually really, it's a really cool little puzzle game. It doesn't take that long to go through, and it's kind of easy, but it's unique. So it's a game where there's one little red block at the top of the level, and then it's sitting on top of a whole bunch of other blocks. And it's a little bit like Jenga, in that you're removing these blocks underneath and making the one on top fall down. And the goal is to get it to land on stable ground and rest as you get rid of all the other blocks. And it's tough to do because all the levels have like a lot of pits in them, and it's all very physics-based. So as you remove blocks, everything else will kind of tumble down. And that's hard to do. And a lot of the levels, there's very little surface for it to actually land on. And so you're actually trying to like very precisely guide it as it tumbles down or cascades down through all these other blocks. And you're trying to make it tumble down in just the right place and rest. And sometimes it lands right where you want it to, but it has too much momentum and it bounces back up and goes into the pit anyway. So like learning to manage the momentum of it and the angles of all this stuff is really neat, and it's easy to play because all you have to do is just use the touchscreen on the gamepad, and you just tap the blocks that you want to remove. And every time you remove one, it's going to make other things settle in and start to drift downwards. And so doing that in a controlled manner, or sometimes a really wild manner, is what you need. Cause sometimes the safe spots are way off on the sides of the levels, and you kind of have to find a way to throw the block over there, by sort of dramatically making it fall very dramatically and land on some kind of angle that will kind of make it bounce off of something and ricochet over to the side. So, it's a neat little game. Like I said, it's pretty easy, and there's only 30 levels in the game. So, you know, normally I'd say, there's not that much to it, but considering it costs $2.
Yeah, it's hard to complain.
Yeah. And it is really fun to play. It's not quite like anything else I've ever played before. And, I enjoyed it quite a bit. So I would love to have more content to it, and I'd be happy to pay an extra buck or two for extra levels. I wish it had a level editor, because it seems like it would be fairly easy to make your own levels, and it could be kind of fun to do that, especially with the physics in it, but it does not have a level editor. So that's kind of too bad. But, if you want something, really affordable and kind of fun to, and it'd be a good game to sit around with friends and kind of discuss, you know, maybe how to do it as well. But, you can only play it on the touchscreen. You can watch it on the TV, but there's no button controls. So anyway, Block Drop U, I think it was one of the first web framework HTML5 games for Wii U. And that might be where I first heard about it. But like I said, it looks nice, the music is good, and it's very easy to play. So I recommend it.
Cool.
And with that, we can move on to Guillaume.
Yeah, so it's October, and people love to play scary games or Castlevania in October in preparation for Halloween. And also usually it's a time of year that Konami realizes, oh yeah, shit, there's Castlevania games that we still haven't released on Virtual Console. So yeah, recently we got on Virtual Console Dracula X, which was for the Super Nintendo. And this game has a weird history. It's kind of a gutted port of Rondo of Blood for the PC Engine, a game that never came out in the US before the Wii Virtual Console. And so now we've played the original, and now this gutted port, this extremely rare gutted port, is out on the Wii U VC. And is there a reason to play it? It's a good question.
It's one we've all pondered.
Yeah.
You're getting deep on us here. Yeah.
Well, I don't know. It's hard to say. Like, the game is very... Well, back in the day, like, it was a disappointment to a lot of people, but... As a short video that we have on NWR TV points out accurately, Nintendo fans weren't really disappointed in the game because it was not as good as Rondo of Blood. Like, they had no idea. They were disappointed because it's not as good as Super Castlevania.
They were probably disappointed because it's just not good.
Well, yeah, there's that, but there's also, like, immediately there's the stark contrast between Super Castlevania, which did so many things that weren't done before in the series, like, you know, whipping in eight directions and the yep. whole dangling whip thing, and using the whip as kind of, you know, like to cross little chasms and things like that. So all those were cool additions to the franchise. And then this comes out and it takes all of that stuff away. You know, it's as if, like, all of a sudden, Mega Man X couldn't climb on walls and, you know, I don't know. Like, it was weird. And, the level design is not all that great. But I don't know. Like, I personally, I don't have that much of an issue with it. Like, Johnny, like, what do you hate so much about the first level?
I kind of hate all the levels that I've played. I've played about five of them, and, I just think it's a bad Castlevania game. I think it's a bad game. I think it's one of the worst Castlevania games I've played, and it, feels not only a step back from Super Castlevania 4, which, you know, I sympathize with the viewpoint that Super Castlevania 4 isn't much of a Castlevania game. It's more of a tech demo for the Super Nintendo. It's too easy. The character's too big. Your whip is so powerful that you don't even need the sub weapons. I mean, all these things are true. I still like that game a lot because I think it's so cool. Mm-hmm. But I think Dracula X is not even really a port of Rondo of Blood. It's like a, it's, you know, I think someone in our forum said it's like a remake if you like described Rondo of Blood to someone who'd never played it, and then they tried to make it on Super Nintendo. I mean, it really has very little in common other than the main character. And I guess the story, if you care about that stuff, but I don't.
Is the character stiffer than usual?
Yes. I mean, the game, the character moves really slowly. He's very slow to respond to your button presses. So the game, it has that old school Castlevania stiffness, but it's actually worse than in other games in the series. It is like the stiffest old school Castlevania that you've ever played. Right. And the levels are really brutal. So, I mean, it ends up feeling, you know, like you need a level of responsiveness and precision that the controls really don't give you. And these mm-hmm. levels are full of Medusa heads and, you know, skeleton dogs and all kinds of things that come out from under the ground while you're in the middle of a jump. And your character just does not have the ability to really deal with these problems. I mean, you could memorize the level layouts and deal with it that way, but you can't. I don't think you can really fairly judge when to respond to things based on just purely going through the level and paying attention. It's a very, very, very unforgiving game that doesn't really have any of the satisfaction of the other Castlevania games. I mean, it's not fun to whip enemies because it's so slow and sluggish.
Well, I don't find the character all that slow. I think he's comparable to other Belmonts, but I do feel that there is a sluggishness to the controls that is not in Rondo of Blood. Actually, I just went back to Rondo of Blood right before recording this, and the character was instantly responsive. There is a noticeable difference. So I agree with that, and I agree with the fact that in Dracula X, your character doesn't seem to be able to get out of the way of attacks. Because he's just, he's not equipped to deal with the hazards, the enemies that are in those levels. But I do think there's some sort of fun to be had if you do know the level and, you know, you learn it by heart and you know what to expect ahead.
If the very first Castlevania is your favorite Castlevania, then maybe you'll like Dracula X. Because it's basically that with like early 16-bit graphics, even though it came out really late in the Super Nintendo lifecycle. I mean, it's a game that doesn't even hold up well against its own predecessors, much less other games that were being released at the time. And it's not even remotely as good as Rondo of Blood, which is on Wii Virtual Console as an import title and is a fantastic Castlevania game. And that game is faster, more responsive. It looks better. It sounds way the fuck better. And it's more fun. I mean, the levels have more secrets in them. There's more variety in the enemies. There's more variety in the mechanics of the sub-weapons and the different things that you can do in the levels and the way the levels mm-hmm. branch out. I just think, maybe it's not, I guess it should be fair to compare it to Rondo of Blood and say this is a far, far, far shittier version of Rondo of Blood. But I don't think this is as good as Castlevania 3 or Super Castlevania 4 and Symphony of the Night. Don't even get me started. So, I just think it's a really bad Castlevania game. And you know, I think it's sad that I never bought up the copy from my old rental store that I played back in 95, 96, because apparently it's worth hundreds and hundreds of dollars now. And I feel really bad for collectors who go out and spend that kind of money on this game because it's a piece of shit. There's way better. Castlevania The Adventure Rebirth on WiiWare is far better than this. It costs the same. So I don't know why you would buy this.
Well, yeah, that's the thing. I think that... Well, I have played worse Castlevanias. I played Chronicles, but that's basically it's a short list. But I still kind of derived some enjoyment out of it. I was kind of surprised that it does have the alternate path thing of Rondo of Blood, where you can, if you fall down a hole in one level, you might end up in an alternate route. So that's pretty cool. But of course, it's way better realized in Rondo of Blood, which is my favorite Castlevania game. But yeah, it's true. I think the Dracula X is kind of like, you can't say it's better than this Castlevania game or that Castlevania game. The only thing you can say for it is that it's better than eBay. If you're curious about this very rare Castlevania game and you're dying to play it and you just distrust what we're saying, then, you know, it's probably worth the $8. It's certainly not worth the hundreds of dollars on eBay. But if you've got $10 to spend, I would just buy that in Wii Points and download Rondo of Blood if you haven't already. because that game is fantastic. So yeah, I guess that's it for Track of the Hex. Very quickly, I've also rented from the library the movie Professor Layton and the Eternal Diva. I had really no intention of watching this movie until I could watch it for free. And just as I kind of expected, it's not that great. It's not the greatest cinematic achievement. The movie does. I was going to say the game. The movie does have a bunch of positive aspects to it. I mean, because the games are so stylish and there's already cartoon FMVs in them made by the same production company, the movie looks extremely faithful to the games. And it's also faithful in that it does contain puzzles. Except that this time, instead of Professor Layton talking to random people and they're just asking him, oh, well, can you solve this puzzle for me? This time there's like this plot written around it where the villain wants to round up like the smartest people, the most deserving people, and not kill them, because no one actually dies, even though they seem to get dispatched and you're sure that they're going to get killed. But everyone is safely, you know, like sent back home or something. It's really, really contrived. But yeah, like the goal is to eliminate everyone and to just leave the one person standing who's going to solve all these puzzles. And it's even got like the kind of counter that all Professor Layton games have, where you have like puzzle 002, you know, the same font. And the movie does the 00 thing, except that there's not hundreds of puzzles in this movie. There's only five. I guess maybe they were like really, really hoping for a ton of sequels. I'm not sure. Always start staring the same villain. Like, oh, let's resume where we left off. 006. True on that, Layton. But yeah, like the movie is an hour and a half of the same voice acting that we get in the games. So it's kind of unbearable. Also, something really, really odd is that Layton is still, as James accurately pointed out in episode 400, like, Layton is just a face with, like, two dots and a smile. Like, he's a smiley face. He's not the most expressive of guys. So when they want him to look pensive, then he has to put his hand on his, you know, on his chin and go like, like, there's no way he can't emote. He doesn't have a face.
They do draw, give him some eyebrows occasionally in the movie.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, sometimes when it's convenient. And he, yeah, like when he's angry, then he's going to have like the angry eyebrows. His tiny dots for eyes are going to be slightly, you know, slanted. But, yeah, the problem sometimes is that in the movie, he's not emoting. Like he's not saying, he's not doing any movement. He's just supposed to look like he's thinking and observing. And that just means that he has this blank stare, and he'll be staring, you know, giving this look to another character, and it looks creepy as hell. It's really, really, like, it's probably the two times that he does that, like, it's probably the most hilarious moments in the movie. But yeah, like, it's just, the movie is not remarkable. Like, I would not go out of my way. Even, you know, the biggest Layton fans, I think, would be kind of bored by this. It's clumsy. There's the movie, the conceit also is that they find this this record in their office, and Layton asks Luke, oh, do you remember this? And he plays the disc, and oh yeah, that reminds me of that case that we're on. And then the whole movie is a flashback, and at the end of the movie they're still listening to the record, and there was no point to it being a flashback, except maybe to make sure that the kids weren't afraid at any time in the movie that something bad could happen. So, yeah, very clumsy and, yeah, kind of a bore.
I've actually spoken about the movie on the show before. A while ago, at this point.
It's, yeah, quite a while.
Probably in the 200s.
Well, you never, you know, I'm talking about it as someone who watched it legally.
I have a UK copy of this DVD, you bastard. So I bought it legally in that it was paid for by myself.
Okay.
I paid for it behind a truck.
It was a gift who someone bought for me. My mistake. But I actually, so a couple things to keep in mind. One, this is a Japanese movie targeting that end of year, you know, movie thing where the kids are kind of out of school or it's winter so they can't go out and play. So there's always this kind of weird rush of movies that come out. I mean, it's not a Golden Week movie, although it is a Toho film, so those happen.
It's probably similar to the Pokemon movies and how they come out, right?
To an extent. I mean, I actually found that it like the fact they use like the title cards for the puzzles, I thought that was kind of charming. It was like, okay, they know what's going on. They're really just playing on, you know, they're just riffing on these games. I mean, the fact that it's a flashback actually is Leighton standard. Every Leighton game, technically speaking, is a flashback. The first game starts with them driving away from the end of the game. It's like they're looking at this letter and they're like, man, this thing took us to some weird fucking shit, didn't it, Luke? Yeah, it got real strange there.
Yeah, Professor, remember that time 3 days ago when all this started?
But it's like, hey, remember when the whole town was blank? And it's just, they're just like, yeah, we just drove away and it was real fucked.
That was a weird one.
And like, to the point where, I mean, story conceits and late and stuff, like the conceit in Eternal Diva is probably the least concerning story conceit of any late game at this point. Cause I mean, they latened all over Leighton versus Wright. I mean, it's pure fucking madness. And I mean, like, I kind of accept that. I was kind of happy they decided, let's be just crazy. Let's just go nuts. I mean, I thought the game was, I mean, yes, the voice acting, and it uses European Luke, which is somehow worse because he's higher pitched, and nasally. I mean, yeah, the voice acting is what it is. It's late in voice acting. You know what you're getting into. I thought that, really, the thing about the movie that really struck with me is how sumptuously it's drawn. I mean, it is really, really gorgeous movie, even when you put in the context of Leighton's faceless face. And you're like,
right.
Like, I mean, there's a giant robot monster thing in this movie, which should surprise no one because it's a Descalay movie, so there's always gonna be a giant robot monster thing. And Descalay is going to have a really stupid plan using it because it's Descalay. And like just how they animated it walking across the ground was really kind of amazing looking. You know, how they drew Azran stuff popping up. I mean, yeah, is it a great movie? No, but I kind of had fun with it in that it's, you know, it's just having that Leighton experience just in like an hour and a half. I enjoy the story of the Leighton games because I'm ready for them to just be stupid and just do something that makes me go, what the fuck are you thinking, game?
Well, I guess in a way I'm not super, I don't know, I was not too in love with the way that the movie is crazy. Like, maybe it's not crazy enough, but there are, two more things that I did like about the game. The puzzles actually, or some of them, actually make sense, and Karen actually figured out the first two puzzles in the movie before I had even turned my brain on. I was like, what? How do you, okay. But also, Leighton does put together a crazy contraption out of like a ceiling fan.
Fuck yeah, he does.
it's pretty amazing.
It's a very silly film. It doesn't take itself very seriously, which is, you know, correct for the franchise. It is, you know, it's got a place in the narrative of that particular arc of games. So it kind of makes sense in the confines of those games. But sometimes, yeah, I mean, it's a late game where you don't solve any puzzles. So it's just the movies. You don't walk around town. So yeah, I mean, to an extent, you're going to be dealing with what that is. I just happen to enjoy what that is. Even in spite of my body telling me you probably shouldn't enjoy this. This is the game being mean to you. And I'm like, no. That's definitely the Loch Ness monster. There's no way that's something crazy. And the game's like, brain's like, no, it's not going to be that. Just, it's going to be swamp gas. Just deal with it. And the movie just does that. And you're just like, all right, 99 minutes and then brain off. And I could just let it go. And, you know, I could deal with it. It's charming in the same way that Leighton stuff is charming. I do think the puzzle decisions they made were very smart because they knew that it wasn't going to be a situation where you could futz around with it. They could only have it up for a short period of time because it's a movie. So the ones they designed for it are very quick solves that you don't have to be tactile with.
They're kind of riddles.
Yeah.
that you can figure out at
it's
home. The,
I mean, that's kind of an, I mean, it's stupid. It's really stupid that there is a movie that takes breaks for riddles. But at the same time, it's really funny.
Well, it's not, I don't know. They don't really take breaks. Like, it's not that blatant. There's not like a timer at the bottom of the screen, but.
Is it like Blue's Clues where the characters like look at the screen and say, what do you think?
Yeah, it's more like the characters are talking together, trying to figure it out. Luke says the wrong answer and, you know, later Leighton ignores them and just goes and figures it out.
But I mean, like that whole dialogue really only exists to give you time to think about it.
Yeah, sure.
It literally takes a step away when it flashes up the title card for the puzzle. And then there's just this little distractionary stuff where it's just like, all right, we're just stalling for time right now while you solve the puzzle in your head. And I mean, it's dumb. Like if somebody told me I made a movie and I put puzzles in, I'd be like, what the fuck are you doing? Are you on drugs? And then they said, oh no, it's a late movie. Oh, okay, whatever. I don't care. Do what you want. Be crazy. So I could deal with this game's just ridiculous, dumb stuff, I guess, because it's what I wanted out of it, which is not something I ever knew I wanted.
For most of the movie, I was just bored.
All right. Well, why don't we move on to John's new business?
Well, gentlemen. Let's see. I actually do have. I have a pair of Nintendo games to talk about, actually. I thought I wasn't going to talk about one, but you know what? I'm going to talk about it. The first game that I have to talk about is Zombie U for Wii U.
Zombie U.
Yeah, I actually picked this up. I went into Best Buy a couple weeks ago. This was actually pre-400, so I originally planned to talk about it on 400, but I didn't, obviously, because we had a whole ton of material to cover there.
Yeah, we actually had to cut things out of that show because we had so much to talk about.
Yeah, we probably could have gone on for another hour or two, to be honest. But,
easily.
Yeah, so I walked into Best Buy, just kind of one of those things, because Best Buy has a habit of really clearing out Nintendo stuff, like older games, but not that old, not like you would see on 360 or anything like that. Games that are maybe, you know, a year old or so, like those things get cleared the hell out of Best Buy for real, real cheap. So I checked out the, you know, I checked out the 3DS area at this Best Buy near me, and it wasn't really much of note. So I went over to the Wii U area, and lo and behold, they had Zombie U there for $7.99. So I'd heard good things about it, so I picked it up, and yeah, it's pretty good. I'm enjoying it so far. I'm into the second area, which is, I think, this like an abandoned like supermarket or something. Pretty cool. It's one of the few games I find that actually uses the gamepad in a sensible way. Kind of goes overboard with it, I think, a bit. You know, you have to go into... It kind of makes sense, kind of doesn't. You know, you have to pretty much, you know, anytime... Everything's in real time, right? So, like, when zombies attack you, you have to open up your backpack, which, you know, you tap on a button on the gamepad and, you know, you choose something and everything is like the zombies never stop attacking you. So you really have to kind of manage your inventory on the fly sort of thing. And then you have to, you know, close your backpack up again. So it's that sort of taking time out from what's going on in the game to kind of manage your inventory is sort of the conceit that they have going on. But it's really good. I mean, it's a violent game. I mean, you're bashing zombies' heads open, there's blood all over the place, and you know, it's cool. It's not what I expected. I didn't really know what to expect, but it was a lot cooler and more unique than I thought it would be.
Do you think it's scary? Is it tension filled or is it just violent?
It's more violent than scary. I mean, it's more, I mean, you know well in advance when you're getting attacked because you kind of have this guy that's
it's not jump scares basically.
No, it's not jump scares. And actually, you know, if it would have been jump scares, I would have been like, that's just cheese ball. Because that stuff, I mean, it's so lame. It's done in a lot of zombie games. And it's so overdone. It's been done so many times before. So it's not those kind of scares, which I can respect that. But you don't really, you always know when you're kind of going to get attacked or because, at least in the areas that I've seen, because, you know, you have this guy that's kind of like your aide. He's the one that sort of, he's the one that deals with, that kind of oversees this underground bunker kind of thing. And he's the one that gives you missions and says, hey, I need you to go into this area and enable the cameras, so you can, you know, see these enemies and see what's going on so I can, you know, help you move forward kind of thing. So you always kind of know what's going on. And if the bunker is getting attacked, it's like, hey, there's a whole bunch of enemies coming in and everything. So, but it's more about just trying to survive and kind of, it's really about preparing and kind of sneaking around. It's much more of a stealth game than I anticipated. So that was really cool. So, I mean, I'm enjoying it so far. The only thing I thought was kind of weird was that it always changes your character. So you choose the campaign, and I haven't done anything about the campaign yet. There's some other stuff you can play in it, but I wanted to focus on the campaign. But when you die, you come back as a new character. So you might start off as, you know, a guy named, you know, Joe Smith. And when you die, you come back as a girl who is, you know, Patsy Jones or whatever, I don't know. But they keep doing that. And I'm not really too sure why they do that. I don't really know what they're trying to enforce, because it doesn't really seem to mean anything, like when you switch your character.
I think the idea is that you may encounter the zombie of your previous self out in the world. And if you kill them, then you can get back some of the gear that you lost when you died.
Yeah, and you can do that. Like, you find yourself. But what I wound up doing was when one of these waves of zombies would come in, I would get killed, and inevitably I would go right outside, and I would find my dead previous self, like, right next to the door where I died. So I'd be like, oh, okay, yep, there I am. Gush, gush, gush. And then, you know, just move on, go about my business. But yeah, it's pretty cool. I'm looking forward to playing through it, because it's just kind of intriguing, because it's not, you know, it's not trying to, you know, be super scary or anything like that, really. But it's just kind of more like, hey, can you survive this sort of thing? It feels more kind of legitimate and less hokey than a lot of zombie games I've played. So yeah. So yeah, it's good.
I've always heard good things, and if I saw it for $8, I'd probably pick up a copy of it too, even on disc. For me, it's just I've always been a bit lukewarm on it when I played it, and I haven't played a ton of it, but you know, enough to get a feel for it. And I'm like, this seems well made, but I don't know that it's for me. But, you know, for that price, it would be pretty hard to pass up. This is a good time of the year to play through stuff like that. You know, you hear about Alien Isolation and games like that. And I think Zombie U was doing a lot of similar things, you know, in terms of, you know, having to navigate these maps, and, you know, you're watching motion trackers, and, you know, the enemies can kill you very easily if they sneak up on you. And, you know, stuff like, managing your inventory in real time. I mean, I guess games like Dead Space have done that too, but.
Yeah, to a degree. Yeah.
But, you know, it's still a good idea, and, it's a good use of the gamepad. So I feel like Zombie U is a game that really came out at the wrong time. It shouldn't have been a launch title for Wii U. Cause the big problem for that game is that no one bought the Wii U when it first came out. I mean, it was such a soft launch that there weren't that many systems out there, and people were so much more excited about playing a new Mario game or Nintendo Land that there weren't that many people talking about Zombie U. And if that game had come out maybe the following October, when there were still not that many Wii U's, but more of an established base, and when people were really looking for a new Wii U game and complaining that nothing was coming out, that would have been the perfect time to throw that out there, and it probably would have gotten more attention than it did at launch. But, you know, Ubisoft, they never met a system launch they didn't like. And, you know, they maybe pushed that game out. You know, and stuff like, you talked about the other modes, but there's a multiplayer mode, but it's not online. So, you know, it's only local, and it's kind of a weird asymmetrical multiplayer mode where you've got one person playing sort of game director and the other person is trying to survive. It's a neat idea, but it seems kind of bare bones, and they probably could have done a lot more with it if they'd left that game in the cooker for a little bit longer, or if they could have done, they can't justify a sequel because the first one sold like shit. So it would have been better, I think, for that game to just stay in development longer and come out at a more opportune time.
When you go back to what we saw back in 2010, was it 2010 when that game was a completely different game?
It was Killer Freaks. It was Killer Freaks from Outer Space, right?
And they were showing off, you know, that mode where somebody had the gamepad and was just making mayhem for the person who was trying to play the game by just spawning stuff. That was actually kind of a cool idea. It was super bare bones at that point. But like, there are things that this game naturally could have included that it didn't. And ultimately, you're right. If it just spent maybe a little bit more time in dev cycles, maybe that stuff would have been included.
Yeah, I think it just kind of got drowned out by launch fever and by other things.
Also, a terrible title. Zombie U is a terrible title for this game.
It's sort of self-effacingly bad. Like, it's impossible to think that the marketing department's like, yeah, that's a great name.
Yeah, no, but they did it for a good reason. They had this hot franchise that they could sap on.
I may have been the only person in the room when they mentioned the rename who knew that was a game. That Zombie was a thing that Ubisoft had made.
I mean, it gained nothing whatsoever from being connected to, you know, a really old Ubisoft game that no one's played. And sticking U at the end of a title, it wasn't a good idea with N64, and it's definitely not a good idea with U.
Yeah, and I mean, it sounds like it should be like a lighthearted kids game with cheery undead characters that you kind of love, even though they're dead. But instead, it's like this, you know, the cover, it's so weird because it's like this dead, you know, whatever, parliamentary guard or whatever it is from like Buckingham Palace or some shit.
For Christmas, just buy your daughter Monster High and Zombie U.
You're exactly. A terrible parent for both.
No, but it's a good game. I mean, if you can find it on the cheap, definitely. It's definitely worth it. It's a little bit slow to start out with, but it's good. It's really solid.
Let's just say for the sake of argument, they dump the price of a digital version of that game. I mean, just dump it. Like, this game is now $9, maybe even less.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And they just go, like, full on, like, hey, let's promote that we drop this game to $9. You know, try to get Nintendo involved in this. Because, I mean, Nintendo would give them press release coverage for it. They don't fucking care.
Oh, when this, let me say, not if, when this game drops to $9.99 on the eShop, it will sell a fair number of copies, I think.
And it should. It should. It deserves it, right?
At this point, why don't they just cut bait and say, okay, we're going to say this game is officially digital only, we're going to cut it to $10, and we're going to promote the fact we dropped it to $10.
Well, now would be a great time to do it, right before Halloween.
It's like, hey, how about the Wii U game that people regard as the best one you haven't played? It's now $10 on the eShop. Go and get it.
Yeah, at least put it on sale. I mean, for crying out loud.
They've got nothing to lose. I mean, if it's been, you know, fire sold out.
It has been on sale before.
Yeah, but not for that low.
But I mean, just drop it and say, this is this game's price now. Go get it. You should go play it.
It's a 2-year-old game at this point, so I don't think they really have anything to lose. So
absolutely they don't. But I'm just curious if they went out and did it and also promoted that they did it and somehow roped Nintendo into promoting it, would they see like a real bump in sales?
Yeah, maybe. Or, I mean, they could throw in a free copy of it when you buy Watch Dogs for Wii U. That's another M-rated game, so that would make a lot of sense, I think. And again, I don't know that they really have anything to lose if they get people talking about it. They'd make Watch Dogs look like a decent value, which otherwise, I can't imagine that thing's going to sell worth a...
I've heard some bad things about the Wii U version of that game.
Yeah, well...
That's not surprising
nothing,
at all.
Nothing needs to be said about that. Yeah. But anyway. No, I'm glad you checked it out, John. It's not a game that we've talked about extensively here on the podcast because none of us really ever had it. But I know Scott Thompson is a humongous fan. Zach Miller is a big fan. I mean, I know a lot of people who really enjoy it. So I'm glad you checked it out. I hope one day it will fall within my price range because I'd like to try it too.
Yep. Yeah, I totally agree. I would not have bought it if it was not $8. So
it's probable I would have played it if it had kept the Killer Freaks thing going on because I'm a wuss. I have like 3 unwrapped Silent Hill games bought for cheap, but probably there were still mistakes.
I do think that aesthetic was more charming. I think their concern was that it was too close to being, this is Zombie Rabbids.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That is what it was.
Yep. I think they were concerned about brand confusion because they had just recently pushed the Rabbids into this multimedia enterprise. I think they were concerned that if they released a Zombie Rabbids, it may poison the well for their attempt to make a Rabbids movie. Fun fact about a Rabbids movie, you wouldn't have to translate anything because nobody talks.
Mm-hmm.
So, John, real quick, what else you been playing?
I actually, coming out of 400, one of the games I finally got exposed to was Shovel Knight.
Mm-hmm. There's a video of that.
That's not the only thing you got exposed to.
Oh, I know. Believe me, I haven't slept for weeks. But
well, it's been gone a week, John.
Feels like a month. But so I really enjoyed that game. You know, I heard amazing things about it. Obviously, it's gotten huge buzz. But I actually getting hands on at 400 was actually really good because I obviously really enjoyed it. So picked it up, and you know, of course, the you know it. looks amazing, plays great, a whole lot of fun. But I was thinking about, there are moments in that game where it just, it recalls a certain magic from the past for me. And I was trying to analyze, what is this magic? What is this, what is it calling to? Right? And so I was thinking about this. I have a lot of time on my hands, so I think about ridiculous stuff like this, right? So I was thinking about it, right? And I was trying to analyze, what is it that calls out to me in this game? And it's the music. The music is the key. That is, the music is, it's the most authentic 8-bit music I've heard recreated. Like, you know, there's like all this, like, you know, like retro game music and, you know, chiptune stuff. But for some reason, this game, and I don't know what makes it different, but there's something about it that it sounds like it's really, really legit 8-bit music. Like, it sounds like, I don't know, there's something to it. And I was thinking, it's kind of like, the graphics are kind of like the body of a game, and the design is kind of like the mind, but the music is kind of like the soul. It's the soul of the game. And this game has soul, man. I'm telling you. It has soul. That's why I like it so much. So that's Shovel Knight. There you go. That's it.
Word. Yeah.
That's all I got.
Are you playing on Wii U or 3DS?
I'm playing on Wii U for sure, because the 3DS is in my doghouse now ever since the Super Mario 3 experience.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Your 2D platformer control issues. Yeah, that's fair. That's a good thing to consider. By the way, I just got an email about Shovel Knight right before we recorded. It is coming out in Europe and Australia soon. It was submitted in mid-September, so they're just waiting to hear back on the old certification thing. But it's finished. The PAL version is finished, and it's been submitted, so it should come out very soon.
Get it.
Is it going to be localized for European audiences? Is it going to be Le Chevalier à l'Appel?
I would expect so. So, all right, well, let's move on to James. James, I know you haven't played a ton, but...
Well, not a ton of new stuff, no. Yeah, yeah. So, finally, just steamrolled through the end of Persona 4, so that two-month journey has finally come to an end. Gotta say, it was a lot easier playing a Persona game when I had 2 straight weeks of work off. really expedited that process. Trying to play that working and traveling, not as easy.
Yeah, I mean, 2 months is actually pretty impressive to get through that game. It's been, you know, the better part of 2 years for me, and I still haven't made very much progress.
I'm still halfway through Xenoblade, so.
I breached the 90-hour mark. I mean, that's what it came down to. And, you know, I probably could have beaten a little bit faster if I didn't grind at the end, but I just went for it.
So you must have gotten the really, like, super-duper ending then, right?
Yes, I suppose I did, yeah. I mean, I did... you don't have to get that many hours. You could fuck up the one part. There's a decision tree you have to make. If you fuck that up, you won't get that ending.
Right.
I had gotten warned ahead of time, like, hey, on this day of the calendar, don't fuck up. And I was like, okay, I won't. And then when I got to there, I'm like, oh, this is what they meant. I should probably make sure I don't fuck up.
Right. So I think I did not bother to get the extra special ending. Like, I got a good ending, but not the best, and it took me maybe like 45, 50 hours tops.
Were you playing Golden?
No.
Oh, really?
No, I played on PS4, PlayStation 2, yeah.
Okay. So I did a ton of the side stuff, though, so that's probably part of it, and hunting for items and garbage. But yeah, I mean, many hours were dumped into that game. But when I got home, besides catching up on that, because it had been a couple days since I'd played it, one of the things I wanted to experience more of was when I said that the Choaniki video wasn't the dumbest video we did. The dumbest video we did was Tekken Tag Tournament 2 U, because that game is idiotic.
Dumbest if you mean awesome.
Oh, it's a beautiful video. I mean, so for reference, when I was at the gym, I watched videos on my phone, and I watched that one and was losing my shit trying to just get through the routine while watching us play volleyball and can't figure out how to make the ball go faster. I mean, if you haven't seen that video, and I know we talked about it on 400, if you haven't seen the video, please, for the love of God, go see that video.
It will change your life. For better or worse, I can't say, but it will definitely change your life.
It's special.
I don't know if you'll enjoy it, but you will be, that time will go quickly. Let's put it that way. You may pass out and it all just goes in a blur, but your perception of time will speed up as that video proceeds.
Yeah, I mean, the question you have to ask yourself is, do you like bears in Mario costumes, yes or no?
And if you said no, why are you listening to this show?
Exactly.
So I brought it home, and when I first talked about this game a while ago, I mean, it was back in January. It was cold, I know that much. So it was like winterish. I was struggling to you know, understand the game's controls and the combo systems and stuff like that. And I had kind of gotten a little bit of a grasp on it, and then I set the game aside and didn't come back to it. And in fact, since we talked about it on the show last time, a couple weeks after that, I hadn't played it up until 400. And the only reason I grabbed it was like, oh yeah, this game's stupid. And I just threw it in my bag as it was like 4 a.m. and I was leaving for my plane.
Thank you.
Yeah, that was a wise decision. So I wanted to get home and get, you know, really get my hands around this game, really understand how to play this game. Because, I mean, yes, this is the dumbest version of a dumb game. I mean, the Mario costumes, well, the Nintendo costumes are the stupidest thing that has ever happened in a fighting game. I mean, when you get to the ones like the Joey, and it's Bowser is the main kangaroo and Baby Bowser is in its pouch with the bib and everything. Like, that's the kind of next level stupidity that only a psycho person comes up with. And I mean, Harada is out there. So I kind of want to, you know, maybe get into this series a little bit more, because if this is the dumb shit I'm going to get, yes, I will take this. I will make this my own. So I spent some time with the single player in that game, and when we last talked about it, people sent us videos of like learning how to play the game. So I actually went back and found those in our email and just kind of went through them. It is a surprisingly deep and technical fighter. And I think that we may have misrepresented that a little bit on the video, which is kind of why I want to talk about it. Like, as I really spent time with some of these characters, I was really kind of getting the feel for them, and I was able to really amp the difficulty up and still be competitive and really understand how this all works. And I was really happy with the game. So definitely, definitely, Speaking of Zombie U is a game you can get for cheap. If you can find this game for cheap, you need to go get it.
Yeah, if this one showed up for $10 on the eShop, I would download it just for parties. I mean, just shits and giggles. And and I mean, you say we misrepresented it, but actually, I would say we did that game a service. And the reason it was pleasantly entertaining for me is that it is easy to play Tekken Tag 2,
sure,
and have fun with it. Which is not to say it's shallow. I never thought it was shallow. I mean, it's like it's the 20th Tekken game, so I'm sure it is very technical, but you don't need to learn to play it technically in order to have a good time with it. And I don't think the heritage of the Tekken series should turn you off from this as an entry point. I mean, Tekken Tag 2 on Wii U doesn't sound like a good entry point for the series, but actually it maybe is the best entry point because it's so goofy and silly and there's so much stuff that you can do in it right off the bat. I mean, we didn't have anything unlocked in that version that you put into my Wii U, and we were able to jump in there and do so much stupid stuff, and we had a blast with it. And so I think it works as a party game, whereas most fighting games really don't, you know. So to me, that's a huge asset for it. That's not to take away from the fact that it's a fighting game that you could really get into if you, especially if you had another person who was going to do
that. I think when we were talking about the game, we weren't 100% sure how technical this game could become. I think there was some conversation around like, is this game really technical? Can you really get deep into it, or is it kind of mash, 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 mash? You know, there's that Soul Calibur debate is a good example. People are like, how technical is Soul Calibur? Well, I mean, it's not the most technical fighting game in the world. I mean, the combos really, as I was getting into them, are really kind of, I'm trying to think of the best way to describe it and without offending the sensibilities of people who are really into fighting games. It's not the same experience, but if you look at something like a Killer Instinct game where the trick isn't necessarily to memorize all the combos, it's to understand how to string things together. That's kind of the skill I'm trying to work on with this thing. You know, it's combining things like a launcher with like a move that lets me juggle and then something to really put power down on the person and knock them across the screen. It's kind of picking up these individual tools and figuring out how to link them all together in a way that makes me effective.
So is it more that there are different like classes of moves? So there's like openers and then there's the linkers and there's
kinda, yeah. I mean, not to the same degree as far as I can perceive yet. I'm still, you know, really getting my head around it. Not like quite like Killer Instinct, where I mean that stuff is, I mean, it's hard in there. This is they are categorized explicitly, but there are things that you can open with that have quick follow-ups that the person can't counter on. And there are proper launchers, and you can actually see some of them in the video where somebody get knocked in the air and then beat it around a little bit. You know, so I've gotten good enough that I can pretty much challenge the AI in all scenarios. So I spent a lot of time fighting in front of Snoop Dogg.
It's mandatory.
This game is fucking stupid, but Snoop Dogg has a stage in it where he raps very, very literally about what Tekken is.
Yep. Believe
it. You punch and you kick and stuff like that. I mean, it's like just yes, Namco, yes. Just feed the stupidity into my face.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it's beautiful.
Yep.
Yep. Okie doke. Well, that's going to wrap up new business for us here on our first episode back. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll catch up on a couple of news items that happened while we were gone and then get into some listener mail. So stick around.
Now playing a sampling of the best new original content at NintendoWorldReport.com.
First up this week, we have a review for 99 Seconds on the Wii U by Don Koopman. You control a spaceship and avoid obstacles and score points. What could this type of game be called? Retro? Old school? Lindemann? Whatever you call it, that's what this is. And Don tells you if it's worth your Lindy dollars.
Lind dollars.
I'm not tolerating currency based on your name. You son of a bitch.
Just wait until you see the design with my face on the bill.
So I will projectile vomit all over. So that'll be fun. This week we have an interview with Curve Digital by Tyler Olu, who talks to Rob Clark of Curve Digital to get the scoop on their upcoming Wii U game, Stealth Inc. 2. Find out what they're adding on Wii U and why this game should be on your radar. Get it? Stealth? Radar? Wait, John, that's not accurate. You avoid stealth when you're in radar mode. God damn it, John!
No, well, but you have to be aware of where you are on radar. Whatever.
Okay.
Forget it.
Great.
Again.
We've yes.
It says there in the script. Forget it.
Comedy is hard.
Yep. Harder when you're reading it off my scripts, apparently. But and for the record, vomiting on my currency is a federal offense.
Great.
We also have the launch of Nintendo World Report TV, which is a new YouTube channel, NWR TV. Make sure you subscribe. Enjoy streaming Joe Aniki. That's right. That's right.
That's a federal offense.
I just said streaming Joe Aniki. Streaming Joe Aniki.
And by the way, when we reach 750 subscribers, Neil's going to give out some free game download codes, and then I think another set of them when they reach 1,500, or I don't know. I don't know what the milestones are, but if you subscribe, then you'll be in the sweepstakes to win some free games.
They're all chilling with Nikki on PC.
And finally, we have a review for Skylander Trap Team on the 3DS/Wii U by Neil Runnelander. Trap King Neil Runahan picks on both of these games. One he finds to be fantastic. The other is only slightly less fantastic. Which is which? It's like a Scooby-Doo mystery without Casey Kasem.
Are you suggesting he's taking on two traps at once?
Yeah, it's a trap team.
Oh,
he's double teaming these traps.
Yep, there we go. Good job, boy. John. Way to save us from the ditch before plowing the car right into it.
No, that's next year's game, Skylanders double trap team. So anyway, we
it's a new portal every year.
Yep, so we have all of this and much more content over at NintendoWorldReport.com, so be sure to go check it out. Welcome back, everyone. Before we get to listener mail, I thought we would address quickly a few of the things that happened in the past few weeks while we were getting ready for 400.
We go on one break and this shit happens.
Yeah, it's not anything that dramatic, but a few notable things that we may or may not want to discuss. So I'll just I'll drop a little bit of info for you, and maybe this will be catch up for a few people too if you missed the news. Smash Brothers for Wii U is coming out in North America on November 21st. It was heavily rumored, but I think a lot of us were still a little bit pessimistic about the game coming out this year because
Nintendo
waited.
Yeah, it was starting to sound kind of weird.
Well, they waited until, about 6 weeks before the game's release date, before actually announcing the release date, and that's uncharacteristic of
and
them.
I think they also announced Europe's like December 4th or something like that. Like the first week of December.
Yeah, so not long after that. But I mean, all I could say is, I'm thrilled. I'm really excited that it's coming out in time for Christmas and Black Friday, which I think is a big deal for Nintendo. It's a big deal for that game being widespread and a lot of people getting a chance to play
it. It's also coming out the same day as Amiibo, which is also big for Black Friday sales.
Oh, yeah.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. I think Amiibo will be a big seller. And so this is really good on Nintendo. I'm sure it was a Herculean effort to get this game wrapped up. And, you know, you got to say, as of course, there's a lot of commonality between the two, but Smash Brothers for 3DS and Wii U are, in a lot of ways, very different games, and there's a lot of distinct content between them. Some of it we still don't know much about on the Wii U version. I think there's still a lot of details yet to be revealed on that one. But think about this. They made two Smash Brothers games at the same time and released them within about within less than 2 months of each other. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, it really is. They're gargantuan projects.
I mean, there's a reason they had to do this, and it's the state of the console market in Japan. I mean, there had to be a 3DS Smash Brothers game in Japan, or a console game just wouldn't sell.
Yeah, yeah.
And so that's why they've sold, what's been out, like 3 weeks in Japan? 4 weeks at this point? Not super long. But, I mean, they're already well through 1.5 million units.
They're at 2.5 million, aren't they?
Well, yeah, worldwide, well, but worldwide, just in Japan.
Right now.
Yeah, and good for them. I mean, they made I would say it is one of the best 3DS games Nintendo has released.
Yeah, absolutely.
I feel safe in saying that, and it seems like they're being rewarded for it. And they have proven that there is a market for a game like this on a handheld system, especially in Japan, which is not a huge surprise, but it seems like they've been very justified in the way that they've handled this whole thing.
To that end, you're getting to the point where like 1 out of 50 people in Japan own a copy of this game, which is stupid and ridiculous. Not Yo-Kai Watch stupid and ridiculous, but...
Right, yeah. Yeah, but I mean, I would suspect also Smash Brothers have a long tail.
Oh yeah, definitely. Especially because the new 3DS comes out there next week, I think. So I expect people to be buying them in conjunction with each other.
Yeah. Yep. Especially if they announce that, you know, there's a few enhancements, which we already know that there are.
Yep.
You know, especially, you know, they could patch that game in the future and add additional features for the new hardware now that they have finished up both versions of it. So there's a lot to come in that game. You know, it's a game that people will be playing for a long time, especially in Japan on the 3DS. You know, you've got kids gathering in supermarkets after school. They're going to be showing it to each other, and they're all going to want to have their own copy of it. So I think it'll do really well. But the Wii U version is probably the bigger deal out here in the West, and the fact that they're bringing that out before the end of this year, before the holidays are over, is a big deal. So I'm really excited, and you know, there's going to be yet another Smash Brothers game coming out in about a month. It's a little hard to wrap my head around, but I'm super excited for it.
And did I imagine this, or are they letting people use a 3DS as a controller on the Wii U for Smash Brothers?
They are, yes.
You know, it's not going to be the best controller for that experience, but it's great in that, hey, if you just bought a Wii U, and I think a lot of people will for this game, you don't have to immediately go out and buy a whole ton of controllers for it. If you have a 3DS, you can use that, or you can have a friend bring their own.
And you also need to have the Smash Brothers for 3DS.
To be the controller?
Well, I think so. I mean,
I don't know that we know that that's true. The game does have a Wii U connection symbol on it, which, of course, we don't know exactly what that does. I'm sure it will allow you to use the system as a controller, but the 3DS may be able to do that anyway without the game in there. So what I suspect is that it will be used for other things to connect the two games.
Right, like exchanging the custom fighters and...
Yes, I'm sure that it will do that. It may allow you to unlock the characters on the Wii U version, so you don't have to go through that process again. And since the characters are all the same, so again, there's a lot about the Wii U version that we don't know, and the connections between the two versions are one of those things. So there's still a few mysteries left to be revealed about the game. They've done a good job of keeping those secret. We also learned that Captain Toad is coming out in North America on December 5th.
Hey, we were all wrong!
Captain Toad is ready for adventure.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
And it's going to be $39.99, which I am so happy about.
That's pretty
sweet. That is so smart. I'm sure it won't be the biggest, most expansive game ever, but I think it will do well at that price. And I think it's an expansion pack of a mini game that was in last year's big holiday title.
Right.
And it is so easy to look at that and say, you know, that looks fun and I like that part of the game. I just don't know if it's going to fill up a whole thing. And by releasing this game at a lower price, I think they're really going to, placate a lot of people's fears about the amount of content in that game. And especially if it turns out to have a lot of content anyway, then it's going to do really, really well.
Yeah, Nintendo has been toying a lot with prices. I mean, wasn't Donkey Kong Tropical Freeze like $50 instead of $60?
Yeah, I don't know that really did it any good, but...
No, but like it seems like they're experimenting, and I think Sony also was experimenting. Like, wasn't there, Smash Brothers knockoff $40 at launch?
Oh, I don't think so. It was out on Vita. That version might have been cheaper.
Mm, it might have dropped in price so fast that it looked like it launched at 40, but
it did that. Yes, it did that.
I don't know. I think that some maybe not Microsoft, but Sony and Nintendo are kind of experimenting with game prices, and that's good to see. Especially with releases like, well, Captain Toad or Sly Cooper 4, you know, like franchises that don't seem like perhaps they would sell at all at $60, but it's good to see that companies that seem to believe that the $60 price point was just a sacrosanct, maybe like there's something to be done there. There's some, maybe there's a scale that they can play with.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm actually really looking forward to Captain Toad. I'm curious about just what it is, like what is the extent of the content in that game? How much variety is there really? But, I think the price point seems really smart. I mean, it feels right.
I was legitimately surprised that they came around and announced this game for North America this year. I mean, I know they said they were going to back at E3, but they had gone so radio silent and they had already conceded the ground in Europe. I figured, all right, it's just a matter of time before they say, yeah, North America, it's coming out next year as well. And I mean, good on NOA for managing to get that game out. I mean, I didn't think it was even possible at this point. I thought there's no way they're gonna get that game out in time, and they pulled it off somehow.
I think it comes down to the fact that they are expecting to sell a lot of Wii U's the week of Thanksgiving, and selling a lot of systems along with Smash Brothers, and Captain Toad probably will appeal to a lot of the same people who are going to buy Smash Brothers and who are going to buy a new Wii U system this holiday season, kids who are getting it for Christmas. And it makes a lot of sense to have another brand new Wii U game on the shelves, especially one that's at a lower price point, which if you're a parent shopping for a kid and you know that, you know, even if you're the uncle and you know that the, you know, your niece and nephew, their parents got them a Wii U system and you want to go buy them a game for it, seeing that there's a $40 game on the shelf that's brand new that you know that they don't have, that's a really easy decision to make. So,
yep.
So the game people may very likely buy when they buy the Wii U is last year's big game, if they didn't have one, Super Mario 3D World. And then when, you know, post-Christmas rolls around, people have money from their Christmas gifts. Hey, there's a cheap game that had that stuff in it that I liked from the previous game.
Exactly.
They can get you coming and going, basically.
Yep, it's very, very smart. You know, a lot of games sell like the week after Christmas because of gift cards and things like that. And also, I got some cash. I got the new system for Christmas. I want to go get an extra game for it. Bam, there it is. And, you know, again, the $40 price point is so attractive at a moment like that. I think it'll do pretty well. So I think they're being very smart about this. And overall, the past few months, I've been impressed by Nintendo's business acumen. It seems like they're actually doing the smart things for once, and I'm excited to see how it turns out. I'm excited to play these games. But anyway, we also heard in a real shock that the new 3DS, the new system, is coming out in Australia before the end of the year, before it does in Europe or North America. Australia, of all places, I mean... I'm impressed they're getting it at all, because Australia just gets the short stick so much.
Well, I guess they're close geographically
to
Japan, and
You have to go around the equator. It's not that close.
Honestly, my theory for why this is happening is that the number of hardware units that they need to do the Australian launch is so small that they can kind of peel off a splinter of the Japan allocation and actually get it out there. Because I think the main reason this isn't coming out in America and Europe before any of the year is they can't make enough of them to really do a good
right.
launch.
Yep. You'd sprinkle exactly. a few into market and then nobody would be able to get them.
It's going to sell the best in Japan anyway, especially at first. So get it out there, work out the kinks, wait until there's more software for it, and then do it in the spring when you can actually make enough of them to do a successful launch. But Australia, just it's a small territory. There's not going to be a ton of demand for it, so it's just more reasonable.
It will
to do
sell
it.
Through what, however much they had slotted for Japan, it will sell all of them. Because, I mean, you can go look at – it's still the top-selling system in Japan right now by a lot last week, knowing that there is a successor system coming out this week. Like, people were still buying the shit out of that thing. So, yeah, they know what however many they could make for Japan will not be enough. So – yeah, I mean, they basically said, okay, can we serve another market here that normally we don't serve? So we could say, hey, we're in two territories by the end of the fiscal year or by the end of the year. Hey, we can.
Yeah, and I mean, really, if they all sell out, you're still not going to hear the complaining, you know, from that territory
right.
that you
and
would from the
Japan,
U.S.
you could deal. But in the U.S., you're dealing with such a higher – if U.S., Canada market or the Europe market, you're dealing with, you know, 400 million, 500 million people depending on what market you're talking about. I mean, you can't physically produce enough to even make a dent in that number.
Yeah, and like, you know, and if they did do a release and there was really limited quantities, they would just make them look bad. People would be complaining.
I think they very smartly looked back at what happened on the Wii and people were basically deriding them for like, why'd you put this thing out if you can't get it to market at all? And said, okay, well, let's just make sure we have enough that we can just dump them. And again, we talked about that January period, early January. They could dump that thing then and be fine. They could dump it in March with the original 3DS, whatever.
There's a couple other factors too. I mean, we've already discussed how the new 3DS is probably targeted more at hardcore gamers, at least at first. That seems to be the case with the games they're releasing with it and with the features that they're adding to it. It's going to be a higher priced version of the system that's going to appeal to people who already have a 3DS and want a better 3DS. And so they don't need to release it at the holidays when they're going to get all that mass market exposure, because that's not really the people that they're going for, at least at first. And the other thing is, when they release that system out here in the West, it's probably going to need to be accompanied by a price drop on the other models, at least maybe a nominal price drop.
Sure.
Or at the very least, it's going to add some confusion to the marketplace. And dropping a system like that on Black Friday when they expect to sell a shitload of 3DSs anyway at the current price, it would be confusing. You know, it would be confusing. It would piss people off. It would create way more range in the prices, and it would be harder to market. So I think it makes sense to wait a little bit because, again, this is not going to be like a mega seller right off the bat. You know, this is going to be a grower for them. So I think it makes sense to do it in the spring.
The confusion point is a good one because you're already going to get parents asking ignorant clerks about, you know, is this Smash Brothers for 3DS game playable in the 2DS? And it's just going to be a shit show. So you probably don't want to
I guarantee you it's going to have the sticker on that says also playable on 3DS or 2DS.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. But
well, and the 2DS has they're pretty good about labeling on that thing that it plays all 3DS games.
Yeah. And a lot of the new 3DS games get the sticker as well. The you can play this on you can play 3DS or also playable on your 2DS, whatever they use for it. For that 2DS I've got just lying around Nintendo.
It's for the 3DS family of handheld consoles, including.
No,
the
2DS. They refer to it as the 3DS family of systems. Oh. Yeah, yeah.
Which includes the 2DS. But anyway, congratulations. I mean, a lot of other people have beaten us to the punch, but really, Australia, you get fucked
and
over
New Zealand, to
so
be fair.
Often. New Zealand, of course. You know, the prices and the release dates, and a lot of games just never even come out there because it's too expensive, or there's not enough demand, or it would cost too much to do the localization or whatever. And you know, I feel so much pity for Australian gamers. And it's nice that for once something is going right for them. And, you know, if you're crazy enough to want the new 3DS the day that it comes out. I'm excited for you to get it early. And, you know, it'll be interesting because obviously the games coming out for it will be in English. I don't know what, if anything, will come out that supports the new system this year. It may just be the new system
itself. It is my understanding that the only thing that is coming out that has any new 3DS functionality is Smash Brothers.
Right. I think that the press release stated
in Japan. In Japan, obviously, there is stuff. But in Australia, apparently, the answer is Smash Brothers, and only Smash Brothers. Which is bizarro crazy land, but I think it goes to our statement that they just figured they could shave off a little bit and say, hey, we're in two regions.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, they'll probably dump, you know, a couple thousand units out there and see how it does. But, you know, if nothing else, it will probably make it easier for us to get some English language coverage.
Absolutely.
Out of that system and how it, you know, how it impacts the Smash Brothers experience, which I'm really curious about.
And
make it to
lean in on our Australian staff. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So good on you and have fun with that. Please tell us how it is. A couple other quick things. We had some system updates in the past couple weeks. The Wii U finally got folders. So that's exciting.
Sweet.
Yeah, they're better than the 3DS ones. You can actually write out complete words.
That's a resolution thing, ultimately.
Yeah, although they don't keep the words together, like they don't, shrink the font or anything. It's just going to, okay, your co-op is going to be on two lines just because we can't figure out how to do this properly.
It's fine, because if they shrunk the font too much, you'd end up with it looking really shitty on the gamepad.
Yeah,
it definitely is encouraging me to think about getting a hard drive, because now I can actually keep things organized to the, you know, because there's plenty of Wii U games I could download and currently don't have on the system because I've had to clean the fridge a couple times. And, you know, with stuff like Bayonetta and Smash Brothers coming out, those are going to be really big game files. And so hard drives looking more and more attractive. And the fact that you can actually use folders now is a big deal. And there's been, I know we complain a lot about Virtual Console, but there have been quite a few interesting Virtual Console releases on Wii U, and there's more to come that we know of already this year for the rest of the year. So downloading that stuff is, you know, it's just easier to find the things that you want when you can organize them like that. So it's a small thing, but I'm happy about it. And, you know, if Sony would get off their ass with PS4.
Hey.
That'd be nice too.
Vita got themes like 2 days before the 3DS did. So.
Yep. Take that.
And Vita's had folders since launch, I believe.
Yeah, but now they've got themes. Since I got my Vita. So.
Yeah. You know, there's not really enough games on Vita to actually put in folders. So, you know.
That's not true at all, actually. All my folders are full.
I just got a bunch of bubbles because I roll with the bubbles, buddy. Which I hate. I hate the Vita interface. Let me just say that. So hideous.
When I saw the PS4 interface, thought, oh, Sony finally figured out what the fuck's going on with the interface. Good job, guys.
Eh, I guess.
I mean, granted, I'm still living in the world of the XMB, which makes me want to kill myself, so.
Yeah, I aesthetically, I really don't care. And we'll get into that in a sec, too, with the 3DS themes. But as a sheer matter of practicality, I think the Vita operating system is great. I think it's easy to use. It's easy to reorganize, easy to find things I want. It's snappy. You can suspend games very easily. You can multitask and have multiple things open. So I really don't have any problems with it. For me, it's a matter of, does it work correctly and can I do the things I want with it? PS4 has a lot of issues with that. It's hard to find the stuff you want. It's hard to keep your games organized.
It's all over the place.
There's a lot of garbage on there that I would like to be able to hide or get rid of. Which actually you can do now on the Wii U. You can, like even with a quick start menu, you can suppress certain things, that you may not want to show up that wouldn't be useful as a quick start. You know, like settings. I don't want to boot directly into the settings menu from the quick start. I would never want to do that. And so now you can go into the power settings on the Wii U and suppress that from the quick start menu. So now when I use the quick start menu, it only shows games. And it shows all the most recent games I played. One of those is probably what I want to boot up. So it's actually made the quick start menu more useful. It was already nice to have, but it was usually half full of, you know, Miiverse and a whole bunch of other crap that, you know, if I boot up TV once, then it's going to be on the quick start for the next month because I don't have 12 different Wii U games that I'm juggling between, you know. So the fact that you can customize that stuff a little bit better is actually really useful. And yeah, folders are nice. I like the folders. I'm glad that they finally put that in there. It's my Wii U is a lot more organized now.
Yeah, people keep dividing, games by genre and stuff like that. I don't really think that's all that useful. I don't know. Some people found this funny, but my folders are to do, completed, garbage because I don't delete anything, and co-op with the girlfriend and party.
Nice.
Actually, an arcade, because there's stuff that you always want to go to, even if it's single player. But, yeah, what's the point of grouping all GBA games together? Makes no sense. Stop doing that, people.
What's the purpose of buying GBA games on the Wii U, Nintendo? What the fuck's the purpose? Why are you doing this? What the fuck is your problem? Why aren't they on my 3DS, you assholes? There.
I'm sure eventually it's gonna happen.
I group them all by console, buddy. I got them NES, Super NES... There you go. And if I get a GBA game, I'll group by that too, and I'm going to like it.
The nice thing is you can do it however you want. So I really like that. And on the 3DS, we also got a system update. The home screen menu has been sort of rejiggered a little bit, reorganized, and now you can apply a theme. You can purchase custom themes, although it does come with a few really basic different color themes for free that are included in the update. And it just makes your home screen look a little bit different. So it's, you know, it's cosmetic. It's not really particularly useful, but it's a smart thing to do. I thought I was actually surprised when I downloaded this and saw what the update was, because I thought this was going to be a feature exclusive to the new system. But they've decided to launch it on the old ones.
Yeah, already. They sort of snuck that part of the announcement out. I thought the same thing, and then somebody corrected me and said, actually...
It might have just been confused. It might have been lost in translation. Because, of course, the new 3DS stuff, that all came from a Japanese direct, that none of that information has really been officially in the West.
No. We haven't had a direct in so long. Like, I thought all of this news was going to come in the form of a direct, and that direct did not happen. So I don't know what the fuck Nintendo is doing right now. Maybe they've lost the tea ceremony room that Iwata shoots his directs in. I don't know.
They're polishing up Billy's media training. He's just not quite ready for prime time yet.
Dear God.
He who shall not be named.
So has anybody actually bought a theme yet?
Oh, good Lord, no.
I have.
Which one did you buy?
Zelda.
Yeah.
Zelda. You bought the worst. That's an amazing theme, dude.
You bought a Zelda game for the worst. You bought a theme for the worst 2D Zelda game, John. Good job. Good job by you, John.
It's an awesome theme, so fuck you, James. How's that for my opinion of it?
Applying that theme is the hardest puzzle related to the Link Between Worlds. There, bam, I'm out.
Oh, come on. Hey, John, do you think it's worth $2?
Sure, why not?
It's your fucking money. Do what you want with it.
It is my money. I don't give a fuck. I like themes. I buy themes on everything. I buy themes on 360. I buy themes on PS3. I like themes. I like buying themes.
John has bought every outfit for his Xbox avatar.
Whatever. It's $2. It's not like... You know, I spend more on a coffee.
Yeah, the question is it worth the money? It's like, fuck it, who cares? It's $2.
They are cheap, which is good.
Yeah.
I think the Zelda one is by far the most attractive. And I do like that they include new music and new sound effects, you know, and you can still keep your folders and everything. So it doesn't really change the layout of the the functional part of the system. It just makes it look a little nicer.
Yeah, it does theme the icons too, though. So it puts a little garnish around the icons as well. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, I mean, so I actually went and got the Hanafuda one just to test out the whole process of buying a theme.
Just to test it out, people. Just to test it out. He's way too cool for school for themes, but just for scientific shit, there you go.
It's funny because when you set the thing up, so when you download the new update, and then you go into the shop, it lets you kind of browse the shop depending on which option you pick. Some options you pick, it says, hey, you need to go ahead and agree to the Nintendo Network Terms of Service. And other ones, it actually lets you browse the shop until you try to buy it, and it says you need to agree to the Nintendo Network Terms of Service. So that all got reset in the new version. And then I spent some time pissing around over there and realized they wrote a song for the Nintendo Network settings screen that you may only ever visit once. It has its own song. And then I realized I was in a dark place where I had to determine how deep Nintendo's fanaticism for creating music went. And I'm like, well, let's get the Hanafuda theme. And I'm like, there's music for this. You fucking crazy people. What are you doing?
They put a lot of time into menu music.
No shit.
They really do. I noticed that. It's really good. It's always really good music, but I'm always stunned. I'm like,
oh, remember somebody sent us that letter that said the eShop music changes every few months. You're like, oh shit, he's right. What the fuck?
Yeah, mm-hmm. there have been several Wii U eShop
songs.
It's
like every 3 months they, what? So seriously, if you've got your 3DS in front of you, go to the Nintendo Network settings screen, which is hastily pasted on top of the settings of the 3DS because that didn't exist when the 3DS launched. They've like squeezed it into the top border. Just click it and listen. That's its own music, and it's actually like really good.
Yeah, it's so funny. They work more on the music than they do on their actual online experience. They're like,
they work more in the music of the 3DS than they do on the music of a new Mario game.
Yes.
Ooh, that's hard to argue. But you know what? I'll confess, if they did a Nintendo Land theme for 3DS that had that little chiptune song that plays at the loading screen of Nintendo Land, and I could have that on my 3DS home screen, I might pay $2 for that.
I actually really like the Hanafuda one. It's a really nice reskin of everything.
It's pretty sweet that they would do that. You know, I mean, how many people in America know what the fuck Hanafuda is or what connection?
I know what it is, but I sure as shit can't play it. It's confusing.
Yeah. I mean, I considered looking at that theme. That was the other theme that I was kind of considering.
It's the biggest full reskin, though. I mean, of all of them.
It's classy. I mean, it looks nice. It really does. For me, I'm kind of holding out for Metroid, really, though.
It's going to say the baby every time you click an icon, though, just so you know. I would buy it at that point just to be obnoxious with it.
I didn't say the other M theme. But yeah, so far it's mostly Mario stuff and then the one Zelda and the Hanafuda. But
and there's some like shapes and stuff. It's just like so those are the 99 cents, which is weird. So there's two price tiers. There's those cheap ones and then there's the nicer one.
Mm-hmm. And then there's the free ones. Right now I think I'm on blue. I tried black, but black was almost a little too monochromatic. It didn't look good.
I don't know. They're weird and they're goofy. I do like that it appears they rushed the Vita ones to market just so they get out before the Nintendo 3DS ones. Like, they didn't even announce, like, here they fucking are, just take them.
Well, and they're terrible themes, too. They're just, like, boring as hell.
Oh, yeah.
So.
It's like, what the fuck just happened?
But they are free, for the record, but.
I could see them doing a Xenoblade theme when the 3DS version of that comes out, you know? That'd be pretty cool. Have really nice Xenoblade music
just
on
just have the music that plays on the opening screen. That piano thing that just goes for like 4 minutes.
Hey John, does the Zelda one animate at all?
I don't think so. No, it doesn't. It just pans. So if you go as you move over, what it does is I think it's split into three screens and it just moves through those three screens as you go through, and then when you get to the fourth one, it just changes back to the first and just keeps scrolling.
Part of me is kind of wondering if we're gonna see the Street Pass puzzles disappear. In favor of these themes, because, you know, why would Nintendo have teams work on puzzles?
I don't think either of them take very long.
No, but I'm guessing it's the same people. Like, I don't know. Like, I would guess that it's, yeah, the same skills are required to make one or the other.
The puzzles serve a promotional purpose, whereas the screens are something like, you're not going to go and say, man, that theme I had to pay $2 for really excited me for the opportunity to go play this game.
No, but if they wanted to promote a new franchise, they could release a free theme, like a really nice one, and that might actually get you used to the art style.
They could, but they could do the same thing with the puzzle as well.
Yeah, they could. The puzzles are a lot more work to actually complete.
Yeah, so it's not an immediate hype tool.
I would think that they will continue to release puzzles, especially around events. I mean, they very clearly dumped a theme on us. Themes are puzzles on us before E3. They've done it before PAX.
Which is very smart. Yeah, and they just did a puzzle for those Kirby minigame things that are like, you know, being sold separately for some reason that were part of Triple Deluxe. So there's a pretty low bar for what merits a Street Pass puzzle. So I'm sure they'll continue to do those. Although, you know, they put some work into those. And if you never go, you know, once you complete a Street Pass puzzle, you can go and it's in a different menu. It's kind of a little bit too difficult to get to, I think. But when you go look at those are like in full 3D and they usually have some camera control and they usually have some animation. And some of them kind of loop through like a little diorama cutscene almost. And they're all different. They all have totally different art styles. There's some real effort put into those. And I don't know how many people really ever appreciate it, but those things are really cool. I don't know that they get enough credit for it. But anyway, why don't we move on to some listener mail? And the first one comes from Adam. And Adam writes, I know you downplayed the TV button on the Wii U gamepad in episode 399, but I just wanted to say that it has been a godsend for me. I'm currently a medical student living in a smaller studio apartment, so my main TV is watchable from my bed. Being able to grab the Wii U gamepad, which is conveniently located in the charging cradle on my nightstand, and being able to turn on the TV, change the input, change the volume, and start playing all from the game controller is incredibly useful. Only needing one device to go from TV off to gaming has seen frequent use. It also made my Wii U my primary Netflix device for similar reasons. A TV remote is small, easy to miss, and gets moved around a lot, but my Wii U gamepad is big enough to never be lost, and always there is a backup remote, even if I just want to watch some football. I love that little TV button on the gamepad. As for my actual question, I am curious what features could possibly be announced for the new 3DS in the future that would push it to a must-buy for you. Could be anything from announcement of GameCube Virtual Console games to things like a suspend-resume mode similar to Vita. Anything that could potentially still be announced and would rely on the extra power or controls of the new 3DS. For me, it would be suspend-resume. Best thing about my Vita is that I can be mid-game and suspend it and turn off the screen, and I can come back a week later with basically the same battery level to resume playing. I would kill for a new 3DS to have something similar, to have something even remotely similar.
I would agree. Yeah, and I mean, as far as TV goes, yeah, like to certain people, it will be incredibly useful.
Yeah, that's a really good use case that Adam described there.
Yep,
for sure. Yeah, and. It got a little confusing, and this all comes down to Nintendo's shitty naming policies of late. But we were talking about this stuff, and James, I think, you were insinuating that there's a TVII button.
No, there is a TV. There is a TV, not TV button on the gamepad, and it exists in no small part in conjunction with the TV. So they don't interface directly, but they're part of the same kind of mental philosophy that put them both together on the system.
Right, and don't you, like, when you press the TV button, doesn't it make an on-screen overlay, like a menu appear that has a TV button on it?
No, because the Wii U doesn't even have to be on. Yeah, you could turn the Wii U on from it, but the Wii U itself does not have to be on for that stupid TV button to work.
Yeah, you can use that button on the gamepad to turn the gamepad into a TV remote that controls your TV. You can change inputs with it. You can change the volume. You can control your cable box from it if you program it correctly.
It is a very weird piece of kit.
Yeah, but it's a neat idea. I mean, and I was trying to defend that feature. It's not useful for me because my infrared receiver on the television is covered up, so it's not. And because it's a touchscreen based interface, I can't use it while sitting down on the couch, which is.
For me, I do have the remote, but my cell phone does that already. You know, I could control my cable box from my computer if I feel like I want to be a real badass. it just walked away. Like, why is what? Couldn't you have done something more useful with your time?
Yeah. Yeah, that's a pretty loaded question, James.
I do like the argument that it doesn't get lost because it's so big.
You know what else makes your remote not get lost? I had to do this. At our relative's house, Velcro and string. That was what it came down to. It was like one of those pens at the bank on the metal chain.
Yeah.
It was a bad scene, but that fixed that problem.
Oh, that reminds me. My dad would Velcro remotes together back to back.
Yeah, he would.
Yep. Just to make it bigger, harder to lose, and
or you lose both of them at the same time.
Yeah, basically, you'd have the remote for the VCR and the TV. I guess that was before universal remotes.
Yeah, I've seen that before. That's funny. So anyway, yeah, I think that is a cool feature. Again, the TVII mode
is the best feature on the Wii U.
That was really the main target of our criticism back on 399. That thing is a complete mess and is really hard to imagine a use case for. But I mean, the gamepad as a TV remote, I think, is actually pretty clever.
I think the use case we found for it was making fun of it while using it during a podcast.
Yes.
I think that is the use case.
Yep.
We did it, guys.
Yeah.
2 years later, we finally figured out what that thing is for. As for 3DS, I mean, suspend resume, I gotta say, you can just close the lid. And I know the 3DS battery doesn't last a long time in suspend mode like Vita does, but that's because your wireless is probably turned on. If you turn off the wireless and it's not pinging for Street Pass and Spot Pass all the time,
yeah, it's
3DS
way faster.
Will last a pretty long time. It'll last a couple weeks on suspend if you close the lid, and you can always, you don't even have to push a button.
Right, but the difference here is that you can't just kind of suspend the game and go to the menu and do something else, and then come back to the game.
Yes, you can. You can do Miiverse. You can do, even in Smash Brothers, you can't do Miiverse in Smash Brothers, but you can do the friends list, which I did to get my friend code for TYP and to enter his friend code. I did all that while the game was suspended. You can flip over to a different game, and yeah, it won't remember where you were in the previous game if you open up a new game, but it also warns you of that at least. It's not gonna delete your progress without you realizing.
But it's just the PSP Go has a similar suspend feature, and I just remember it being a little bit more versatile than the closing the lid on the 3DS. I don't think you could watch Netflix, for instance, under 3DS and then go back to the game.
No, because it's a full app. It takes up all the memory of the app of the system. You can go to the browser, you can go to the notes, you can go to the friends list, you can go to a couple other things, and that's pretty much it.
Right. So, yeah, Vita suspend feature a little bit more advanced. It would be nice to get on the 3DS.
Yeah, there's no doubt the Vita version of it works better. But again, I just say 3DS already has this. I mean, it'd be nice if they made it better, but it's not like it wouldn't be a completely new feature, I don't think.
The suspend feature on the PSP Go was the biggest. It suspended all sales. Boom!
Hey-o.
All right. Does anyone else have is there anything else that hasn't been mentioned yet that would drive you to buy a new 3DS?
I mean, I plan on getting one anyways. It's just a matter of when, because I mean, I still have the old 3DS, so.
Right. I have that launch day unit at this point.
Yeah. I have a burning need to replace it. And again, it's aforementioned shitty D-pad. But it's a question of for me, will they pack it in with something really cool, like Monster Hunter 4, let's just say.
Yeah. For me, it's just, but can they announce a game that like, that I really want to play on it that I can't play on the current one?
That's exactly. Yep.
As somebody who uses the 3DS, the 3D on the 3DS extensively, I'd guess on this show I probably use it the most frequently. The having to not worry so much. I mean, I don't really have a big issue with the viewing angle, but knowing that it will be even easier to keep is kind of a big deal for me.
Yeah, I like that too.
I'm super curious to actually experience that because I love playing games in 3D. I always have 3D all cranked all the way up. But depending on the situation, if I'm lying down, if I'm sitting in a certain chair, if I'm in the right light, if I'm on a bus that's vibrating a lot, it can be easy to lose the effect, or it just shimmers a lot. It's like in and out of 3D, you know, because if you tilt it from side to side, then you're looking at the two different screen, the two different layers of the screen, and you lose that stuff. So, you know, having that camera track your eyes and actually maintain it as you go through all these motions that are natural when you're playing a handheld system, I'm really curious to see how well that works and how much it sounds like it could be just that much more immersive, which is really what I want out of the 3D feature.
Now, they haven't announced anything to that effect, so it probably, I don't know, I'm not getting my hopes up, but I have to imagine that all these, that more emulation possibilities are going to be possible in the new 3DS. Like maybe we're finally going to see DS games on the eShop or GBA games. But that's just, yeah, like if they haven't said anything, it makes it very unlikely, and I'm not getting my hopes up, but it would definitely make me, you know, consider getting a new 3DS more than I currently am.
All right, so Guillaume, why don't you read the next email?
I will. Robbie writes, I'm a pretty big fan of Kingdom Hearts, so I'm always really excited for every new entry in the series. I think there is a misconception that portable titles are spin-offs that don't impact the story much, but actually every entry in the series is very much related to the story as a whole. I take it you are all unfamiliar with the series, but for me, I enjoy it for the amazing music. Yoko Shimomura is my all-time favorite. I also like it for the interesting story and the crazy action during gameplay. This game hits on all those cylinders, with the exception that most of your leveling for your abilities is done through simple minigames that, while fun at first, get repetitive and take you out of the action.
For reference, this game is Dream Drop Distance, which we had put out the call to get people's opinions on.
Yes. And this is in stark contrast to previous entries in the series. To the previous entry in the series, Birth by Sleep, where you level abilities by actually using them in battle, which of course is the most fun part. Anyway, don't want to bore you with super long email, but I could go on. If you haven't been playing since the beginning, you will be lost. But I think it could be still be enjoyed just on the merits of its graphics, light and fun action, and music.
Yeah, that's the answer we're looking for, I suppose. It is interesting that his point that the portable games aren't regarded as spin-offs, because they just released the 2.5 HD remake in Japan, and they released 1.5 in the US already, I think. Basically, in those remakes, they include like full Earth to Sky remakes of a lot of the weird handheld games, or like content representing the narrative of strange mobile only games that were free to play, just crazy browser only things that are a part of the canon. So, I mean, this stuff, I guess, really matters to people who are hardcore fans of the series. So it's out there. Go enjoy, I suppose, if that's what you're looking for.
Yeah, I think the 1.5 remix on PS3 included a remake of the Chain of Memories GBA game, right?
Yeah, I think it included a remake of a GBA game, maybe a PSP game, and maybe like a video representing the narrative of a phone game. I mean,
and which one is Birth by Sleep? Was that the PSP game? And I think the DS one was like 358 over 2 days, whatever that was.
I want to say there were two DS games. There are a lot.
There are a lot of Kingdom Hearts games, yeah. And then, of course, Dream Drop Distance is the subject of this email, was the 3DS game, which I, back on, I think, $3.99, I had sort of put out the call and said, hey, has anyone even played this? Like, no one talks about it, it seems like. Maybe it's just that the Kingdom Hearts community is very insular. I mean, they seem to be very aware of how complicated the story of that franchise
yes.
is, and how it's very... It's not very friendly to new people, and so maybe they don't really try to push it or try to spread the word about those games. But it sounds like at least Robbie is pretty happy with the 3DS game and thinks it's worth playing. So that's good to hear.
So yeah, there are two DS games. One of them is a remake of a cell phone game that RE coded. The cell phone game was just coded. And then RE coded is remade on, or is represented in a video form on 2.5 HD, because... Good God, Square Enix, what are you doing?
And then is Birth by Sleep the other one, or what?
Birth by Sleep is a DS
PSP game.
That's the PSP, but then the other DS game is the 358 over 2 days, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Also, the names of these games are just so
yeah, they're pretty bonkers. Yeah.
Jeez.
So HD 1.5 is the first Kingdom Hearts game, Chain of Memories, and 385 over 2.
Hmm. I'm just kind of biting my lips because I hate. I'm kind of a Kingdom Hearts hater. I absolutely hated like the 5 hours I played of the first game, and there's some serious design issues with that first game. Like I'm not sure how people stuck through with it or didn't experience what I experienced, but it was really really unpleasant. Like the game starts you on an island. It has you platforming when the physics for platforming are really not up to snuff. And it gives you strange signals, like it asks you to get coconuts from this coconut tree, but it doesn't tell you how, and so it doesn't tell you what tree. So you go to the trees that seem to have coconuts in them, you climb them, you can't get the coconuts. You try swinging your sword at the trees. Nothing happens except that Sora, the character, just has this long animation of just, you know, kind of bouncing back, his sword bouncing back on the tree. And then it turns out you have to kind of roll into it, but very precisely. There's no feedback for what you're doing. Like, it doesn't tell you what you're doing wrong. And then you get to this town and you're looking for Goofy and Donald, and the game could have had you kind of like there's like these scenes where you just missed them, you know, like they were there, but then you get enter the area and they're gone. And they could have had it so that you visit all those areas like the required for the three cutscenes and you're done. But no, like you have to visit them in a specific order.
Well, stop being slow. God.
It was so bad. Like, if you went the other way instead of the way they had intended, then you had to go around the town three times.
Yeah, and then when you get through that stuff, you make a gummy ship and play through that weird, you know, 3D shoot 'em up thing, which even fans of Kingdom Hearts will admit that was kind of the worst part about that game, or was not very good. I played more than you did of the first Kingdom Hearts, and I thought it was okay. It's definitely sloppy, and I all of them that I've played have been kind of sloppy. Charming for sure, and the story is intriguing. Beautiful. Yeah, very beautiful, and I love the idea of a square type RPG with some recognizable Final Fantasy characters and stuff like that mixed in with all those Disney characters. Although as the series went on, it seemed like they got away from the focus on, now Cloud can be in your party along with Donald Duck. And it's really more about the original Kingdom Hearts characters and more of a focus on the Disney stuff. But I like the idea of a Disney RPG where you're going into these different worlds and you're seeing all these different art styles and you get to talk to these characters and they join your party or you fight against them. That stuff's really interesting and in principle. I've never liked the execution of it, and the series definitely seems to be way up its own ass to the point that it's very unwelcoming to new players, even though it's a very accessible premise, but the games themselves really aren't very accessible at all. And unfortunately it didn't grab me, but the people who are into Kingdom Hearts really seem to love it.
Yeah. I apologize to Robbie.
There's a ton of excitement over the third game, which is now on Unreal Engine 4. So
yes.
If nothing else, it will be gorgeous. And I'm very curious to see how that game looks in motion, even though I might never play it.
Hadn't they announced their own handmade proprietary engine just like 2 E3s ago? Did they just fuck off and just say we don't need this anymore?
This is Square Enix we're talking about.
True. This. How can we blow $10 million today? Yeah, I have an idea.
They have to make all of their games at least twice before they come out.
Yep. It's called iterative design, Johnny. Come on, get with it.
If you really, really want to get into the Kingdom Hearts franchise, like in a couple weeks, you'll be able to get them all on your PS3, where they had to remake some of the games from scratch because Japan. I was going to speak briefly about the music. I mean, I don't have to play Kingdom Hearts to get the Shimomura fix.
Yeah, you are a huge fan of her stuff.
Xenoblade Chronicles, Radiant Historia, Live Alive, Front Mission. I'm trying to think what else I've played that she wrote the music for. But yeah, I mean, yes. Yes. Really, really strong composer. Yes.
Well, I'm sorry, Robbie. I didn't want to shit on your, you know, the series that you're a fan of. I just had to get that off my chest.
I just had to shit all over the series you're a fan of.
It was so unpleasant. The experience could have been better if I had been luckier, or I don't know.
Okay. Well, it'll be interesting to see. It seems like they have really tried to collect Kingdom Hearts fans onto the Sony platforms. And I'm curious to find if they continue to make the games for Nintendo systems, because they've been doing that at least for portables, for GBA, DS, and 3DS. They've made Kingdom Hearts games for all of those. And it'll be interesting to see if they maintain that, even as the series seems to be stuck on Sony consoles for the most part. But anyway, we've got time for one more email, and John, could you please read that one?
Yes, Daniel writes, what are your thoughts on the Hyrule Warriors limited edition that was only available in New York City at the Nintendo World Store? I saw a lot of talk across the internet about how this was unfair, that it should have been made more available, and so on. I understand that not everyone can get to New York City to buy a single game, but this is why it's considered limited. Has everyone... but me, forgotten about the way the word is defined. Many items are exclusive to a certain region, event, or only available for a limited time, and so on. Why all the fuss over this one in particular? Also, I just wanted to let you guys know I appreciate all the work that goes into the show. I saw your live panel at PAX East in 2012, having never heard of NWR. I was just interested in a Nintendo panel. Since then, I haven't missed an episode and look forward to these new downloads each week. Keep up the good work. Thanks and thanks.
Thank you. Thank you. That is really cool. Yeah.
So let me give a little preface on what happened here, because I actually got to watch the horrible Twitter storm that happened as a result. So in Europe, and maybe in Japan as well, there was this pre-order bonus with, you could buy like the special edition version of Hyrule Warriors that came with the really ridiculous, scarf that Link wears in that game, that blue and red, completely non-canonical scarf that they added to Link And for whatever reason, people really want this thing. So in Europe, you get it pretty easy. I mean, you had to pay more for it. In Japan, you same deal. In North America, it didn't look like we were going to get it. And then Nintendo sort of did a quick about face and said, actually, on launch day, if you show up at the Nintendo World Store, we're going to have a limited number of those to give away. Nintendo World Store is in New York City. I think it's near Times Square.
It's in Rockefeller Plaza. Yeah, not it's a couple blocks away from
when Times Square. When they said limited, they fucking meant it. They did not have very many. They had a very small number.
They had
like, the point where,
300.
Yeah. And 600 people had showed up before they had finished out giving out tags.
Wow.
So to the point where basically, hey, Nintendo, maybe you should have thought about this.
Yeah.
So half the people who were there went away with nothing.
And obviously a lot of people couldn't get there at all, right?
Right. But I think what the biggest storm you saw was that literally they turned away half their people. This is a situation that Nintendo needs to recognize that their brand has a sort of pervasive pull that people will line up to buy a scarf, like I said, that is non-canonical for a character in a non-canonical spin-off game in a series they may have never even heard of. Like they really wanted this stupid scarf, and like they need to understand this is what they're dealing with, and they need to kind of be aware of this stuff. So I can understand saying, okay, we're only going to sell it at the World Store. But maybe don't have people line up at 4 a.m. and then realize they're still not going to get one. Like, you need to be better prepared for this kind of stuff.
Yeah, it almost seems like it should have been something that they should have had as part of a contest if it's that limited. You know?
Yeah, I mean, in other regions, it wasn't that limited, though. So ultimately, Nintendo could have sourced more of these. NOA just opted not to.
Yeah.
Yeah, they must have thought they were doing people a favor by, you know, sort of surprising people with, hey, we're actually going to get a few of these. If you're really hardcore, you can come get one, except you can't.
Unless you get here at 2 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
For a 10 a.m. opening. It's like, no.
I have to say, my first reaction to this is schadenfreude, because I think collecting physical goods unrelated to video gaming is kind of an unhealthy habit. It's a good way to waste a whole lot of money and a whole lot of effort on something that really is meaningless and does not enhance your video game experience whatsoever. But
is your cat's head safe, John?
I know that people like these things.
Yep. Stop shitting on people, Johnny. Stop shitting on people.
I'm just saying there are much better ways to spend your money.
Yep, that's good. That's great. Works for you, Johnny.
It wasn't like it was exceedingly more expensive than the normal version. I think ultimately this is a situation of Nintendo not realizing the pull of their own brand.
Yeah, clearly. I mean, they clearly got a little too big for their britches. And, I suspect that Nintendo of America learned a lot of important lessons through this experience. And,
yeah.
They not only will probably not repeat this mistake again, and they'll be better prepared next time, but I bet you they saw that, yes, indeed, there is a crazy demand for this particular item that people know exists and they want it, and we were not able to get it out to them. And I bet you they will find a way to make more of them.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's a scarf. It's not that hard to make.
In its own way, devalues the thing that people wanted in the first place, right? Because they're going to end up making a whole bunch more of them, and they'll put it on Club Nintendo, or they'll make it a platinum reward, or they'll put it on the website and charge a bunch of money for it or something.
Maybe they make the ones that they make now different in some way. So, well, these aren't the super rare ones.
Then the collector people are going to want that one too.
Well, that's fine. Collector people are nuts. Collector people will go on eBay and pay $100 for the dumb thing. This is for the average fan who just really wants, you know, something.
Sure. But I mean, you know, people who actually show up at the store and they line up and they expect to get a really cool item that can only be gotten there, you know, they're there for the experience and they expect to walk away satisfied with something to take with them. And the fact that they were turned away empty-handed really sucks. And I suspect that Nintendo of America will, or at least they should, find some way to rectify that.
Right, because these are your most hardcore of hardcore fans.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't think I disagree that these people are more hardcore than I am. I think they are hardcore in their own specific way.
Okay, would you have? Yes, they are hardcore.
No, wouldn't do that doesn't mean I like Nintendo's video games.
These are extremely devoted consumers. They have
clearly, yes, they're willing to put themselves.
Yeah,
out there.
I was surprised that they wouldn't do something like hand out a coupon or some sort. Like, hey, we're sorry, we screwed up, guys.
Yeah, we fucked up real bad. Okay, we're gonna call NCL and get like 300 more of these.
Or like really take down their names or do something like that. You know, like go like go above and beyond what you would normally do. Like say, okay, well, hey guys, we fucked up, but we're Nintendo.
Hey, we're gonna call Japan. We made a big boo boo.
Yeah, they certainly could have collected a list of names and email addresses.
Of course, nobody there was probably empowered to do it.
Yeah,
ultimately.
Goes along with the poor planning, right?
That's a Nintendo of America problem. That's a corporate hierarchy or problem. But yeah, I mean, they could have done some kind of reservation system and said, guys, we didn't make enough. We didn't expect this many people. Let's take down your name. We'll let you know when we get in more, and then you can come and give in. They'll have the list at the desk, and if you want to come by one later, it'll be there for you. That's a really easy solution to this problem.
Yeah, but again, that would require somebody who was at Nintendo World Store at 10 in the morning on a random Sunday feel like they can make the call that we will get more of these.
Right, right.
Which they're probably the only people who were there were hired PR staff.
Yeah. I'll say I would be far more sympathetic to the situation if this was an actual – well, I'd be a lot more pissed about it if this were an actual game that you couldn't get otherwise. You know, like if they were going to say, well, we're going to release Zengeki no Reginlev for Wii in the black box and
– You son of a bitch!
That example hurts.
But you have to be in New York on this specific day to buy this game. That would really suck. But the fact that it's a scarf, I find it very hard to care. But I do feel bad for those people who went out of their way to go, you know, do this thing and they weren't able to get it. I think you should question your priorities if you
really There it is. I was waiting for the condescending cheap shot.
Whoa.
So condescending.
So predictable.
It's a scarf for the people that lined up for the scarf. It's a scarf.
I'm sorry, you're so stupid. Signed, Jonathan Metz.
It's a scarf with a logo.
Come back next week when Jonathan Metz has been destroyed by Nintendo fans who wanted
a scarf.
And I'll be starting a new regime as head of Radio Free Nintendo.
With a logo.
We'll be in mourning for a couple weeks, but then we'll forget it because fuck him.
Don't buy limited editions of things. Yeah. Don't. Just don't.
Oh, it's fantastic. The condescension is delicious.
You will be happier once you learn to not care about things like that.
I feel really bad, except these people are big, stupid idiots.
No. But yeah, I mean, it's Nintendo needs to get their shit together. If they're going to do stuff like this, you got to do it right.
And, you know, I'm okay with it having just been at the World Store. I mean, it would be cool if you could get it elsewhere. Or maybe
I mean, I hate to tell you, collectors, there's a lot of stuff at that store that you can't buy anywhere else. So if you're not going to that store on a regular basis, you're missing out on a whole bunch of limited. There's t-shirts and backpacks and all kinds of stuff. It's all merchandise. It's not video games, but there's a lot of very specific limited edition merchandise that they only sell at that store. And if you don't go to that store, you're missing out on a whole lot more than just this one Hyrule Warriors thing. So this isn't that unusual, but I mean, those things are in stock. You know, if you go to the store, you can find
right. This was a very specific situation where they ended up encouraging people to show up at 2 a.m. and still not get something. I mean, they should have maybe done some informal checks. Like, hey, how many people do you think we're going to attract when we sell this thing?
All right. Well, thanks for writing in there, Daniel. And we're going to wrap up this episode. So,
and fuck scarves.
Yeah. Before we go, please keep in mind you can send your emails to rfn@nintendoworldreport.com. You can tell me what a hateful bigot I am against Nintendo merchandise.
Please do that.
Go ahead. You go right ahead.
Oh, I want that so bad.
You can also listen to a brand new episode this weekend of Radio Trivia Podcast Edition with TYP and our friend James Charlton from the Famicast. They're going to be talking about video game music and playing and listening to video game music. I highly recommend that you check that out. And one more thing before we go, I think we should do a little bit of a revelation here. It's not completely finished yet, but I think it will be very soon. We've been working hard on a special revival edition of NWR Powered Off. That's the PDF magazine that our website was doing for a little while. And this is going to be a special issue devoted to this podcast on the anniversary of RFN 400. So we want to thank Nick Bray. He's the guy who is really behind the scenes putting all that together. He's doing the hard work of the layout and the planning and getting it all made, and Nick is the mastermind behind the Powered Off magazine. So
it feels good for a place for my inane ramblings to go again.
Yeah, so he's been getting us to write some articles and provide some photos and a few other bits of information to get it all together. And the content of the magazine, again, it's not complete yet, but it's almost all kind of behind the scenes inside baseball stuff about the podcast, about Carl wrote some stuff about the early days. And there's, I did a feature on the meaning behind the episode titles and things like that. So, James did a whole thing about how he writes Now Playing.
Which I haven't done in like 3 weeks.
Awesome.
Yeah. But, so yeah, if you really like the podcast, I hope you will check that out. I don't know exactly when it's going to be out yet, but I think we're getting pretty close to finishing it. And I'm so excited. I just think, how weird and awesome is it that we're going to have a magazine about our podcast? I'm super excited for that. And if the cover idea works out, it will be gloriously stupid. So I'm really excited to see how that turns out as well. So anyway, that will be coming soon. I just wanted to let people know so they can get a little bit hyped up for it. That will be probably one of the last things that we do relating to RFN 400. But I'm really, really looking forward to it. And I think it'll be kind of a special thing for us to cherish long after the memory of the podcast is gone. So anyway, look forward to it and be checking out NintendoWorldReport.com for updates on that and lots of other things. And otherwise, we'll get back to you next week.
The music. We meant to plug the music on 400 and we didn't.
Right. Well, I kind of want it to be a surprise on 400, but I'm glad you brought it up now. So we have a brand new theme song, which you've heard now a couple of times. The name of the song is Men of Leisure. And
yeah, it is.
That is a piece of music written exclusively for Radio Free Nintendo by a listener of the show named Perry Burkham. And you can find out more information about it every week on the show notes down in the credits section of that article. So you can go check out more stuff from Perry and learn a little bit more about him and what he does. But we really want to thank him. It was it's awesome to have new music after it's been at least a couple of years since we changed out the music on the show. And the fact that we now have our very own theme song that is exclusive to this podcast, I'm really thrilled about it, and I really like the song, and I think it's working out really well. So thank you, Perry, and hope everyone is enjoying that as well. So we are now going to wrap up the episode, and we'll get back to you next week.
Bye.
If you buy scarves, you're the devil.
Scarves are for suckers.
Just iron on your own logo on your fucking scarf.
I mean, seriously, are you a child?
Back in my day, we made our own scarves.
You're a child, you're a baby. You're a scarf-wearing baby.
Learn to knit like a real man.
Get the Cheetos dust out of your neck beard so you can put the scarf on it.
Oh, dear.